the Talking Games Podcast.
Welcome back. This is the Talking Games Podcast, episode 119. It is Sunday, the 19th of November, 2023. Hope you've all had a very good couple of weeks. We've been gone for a little while. We are in the process of launching our Kickstarter this week. I have got one final bit of trailer to do before we launch the Kickstarter. I want to thank all the publishers and developers who are going to help us share it. So if you see it on social media, please like and retweet. Get the word out there so we can get enough funding to make our demo. And anybody that does donate to the Kickstarter will get a copy of that demo. There's also going to be, and you can also donate, that'll be really helpful. We are trying to raise a substantial amount of money to try and make that demo for the game so we can actually get it published. That is our next step. But if you can help us out, that'll be fantastic. If you can't, please like, retweet, share it around, post it on all your other social media, Facebook, Insta. Just get the word out there, and then hopefully we'll get funded because we really need to make the demo if we're going to get the game ready and finished. But I want to thank the guys for being here this week. Bam Bam Nightmare, how you guys doing?
Doing pretty good. Haven't played at all.
Well, I've just been, I'm about three quarters of the way through replaying Mafia 2 again. I completed that when it came out on the PS4. I haven't completed it yet on the PS5, so I'm trying to get that finished. I've just completed Ratchet & Clank Rift Apart. That game's brilliant. It's much better than the first one. And what other games have I played? I've been playing God of War as well, the original, because I never completed it on the PS4 when it came out. Actually getting it done now. And I've just started Horizon Forbidden West as well, so I'm getting those four games done this month before Christmas comes, because I have got a number of other games that I'm going to be getting this week as well. I still need to get play Spider-Man 2 yet. I've only had about a couple of hours on that at a friend's house. I haven't finished it, which is sucky. But I'm not, you, we were talking before we started recording, Bab. You've been playing Walking Dead, isn't it, Telltale?
No, that was me.
Yeah, I said, oh, sorry. I did say Bam Bam, didn't I? It's late. You guys have hit me up until 9 o'clock. But
what time is it there?
9:30 at night.
Oh, God.
It's three. The length I go for this platform, Sarah. what have you guys been playing this week?
Me, Crash, Telltale, and Fortnite. That's it.
Oh, I know Benny's been, my little boy's been on Fortnite all this week. He beat three lobbies in a row, which I'm very proud of him. He's getting better at Fortnite every week. Bam, what have you been playing?
I've just been playing Yakuza, Like a Dragon, Gaiden, the man who erased his name, trying to finish up that platinum on that. Picked up Super Mario RPG. I haven't actually dived into that at all yet, but I got that waiting as soon as I finish up this platinum. And other than that, man, I played a little bit of Halo, you know, ran some Halo matches, you know, mopped up some people. But that's really been it.
We have got Shinobi's Like a Dragon Gaiden review dropping tomorrow. Alex's Spirity review is going to be dropping tomorrow. I know I was supposed to finish my Robocop review last week, but I did get a little bit stuck at the end because I can't beat the final boss. It is an
absolute nightmare. How is that game, man? I want to pick that up for Black Friday.
It's really, really good as far as if you're a fan of Robocop. If you watch the movies or read the comic books, then you're going to be all over that. There is some issues with bugs. There is stuff with like cutscenes freezing, volume going up and down when people are talking, and it's not because they're shouting, it's just the volume goes really loud for some reason. I think the bugs kind of let it down. But the combat in it is just ridiculous, like the ragtail physics when you shoot someone in the head explodes. It's just brilliant. The gameplay, I like it. It's just the bugs that ruin it.
Yeah, like I really do like how gory the game is. Like I remember I watched that original RoboCop movie back when I was a kid. I was not supposed to be watching that movie, but
nah.
I like how the gameplay just showcases just how gory and how brutal RoboCop is.
Yeah, that scene that sticks with me still is the warehouse scene when the guy goes into the toxic waste. I saw that.
That boy was melted, man.
That's disgusting. I saw that at the age of six, and that gave me nightmares for a week. It was disgusting. And I should not have been watching that. I snuck downstairs and my parents were asleep. But, yeah, that movie's memorable. I'm really thankful they've actually made a good RoboCop game this time. I wouldn't say it's great or a masterpiece or anything like that, but I will say that the new RoboCop is It's good. It's a very good rendition. If you're a fan of RoboCop or know anything about the character or the franchise, then you're going to be in love with it. But I do think they need to patch the errors, because my review score is going to reflect the fact that it is buggy as shit at some points. There are issues with, like, RoboCop getting stuck in the floor, not being able to, you can't fight, struggle to find stuff. There's no hints of what you need to do or where to go. There is some major bugs in that game, and they do need to fix it. If they release the game in a more polished state, then I think that the game would have scored a lot higher than it did. A good 7-8, I think, is fair for RoboCop. My reviews will be coming this week. I'm going to get it done this week, because I've got another 3 reviews I need to get onto. But we've got to jump into the news. We are waiting on Shinobi. We're going to be here very soon. First thing we've got to talk about, though, is this Xbox tax that's been trending on Twitter for the last week. The Game of the Year 2023 nominations were announced on Monday. We did cover it on the website if you want to go check out who's been nominated. Obviously, the backlash is going on because Xbox didn't get a single nomination for their, I think it's that 3 games they released this year. They didn't get a single Game of the Year nomination. All the six Game of the Years this year, Alan Wake 2, Baldur's Gate 3, Marvel Spider-Man 2, which is shocking considering how buggy that game is, and it has got bugs. Resident Evil 4 Remake, Super Mario Bros. Wonder, which some people are saying shouldn't have been nominated. Some people will beg to differ, but Tears of the Kingdom outright should be anyway. Those are the 6. I'm going to say that Sony is probably going to have a difficult time in getting Marvel Spider-Man to win anything, because in every category that Marvel Spider-Man 2 is nominated in, he's also going up against Baldur's Gate 3 at least. So if that's going to be the issue, I mean, Baldur's Gate 3, from the looks of it, is going to sweep every award. Starfield's going up against Baldur's Gate 3. I do think that Starfield has a chance in getting Best RPG, but it's still going to be an issue with Baldur's Gate 3, because Baldur's Gate 3 really isn't a typical RPG. It's a CRPG, and usually in the West, CRPGs don't do very well, but Baldur's Gate 3 did, and it's going to be a toss-up between them two. As far as what Marvel's Spider-Man's going to win, I mean, you've also got Hi-Fi Rush, has been nominated for 5 awards, there's Forza Motorsport's been nominated. The fact also they nominated Destiny 2 for best online game, I mean, that's got to take the mick. That's taking the mick a little bit. Destiny 2 has been awful this year. And it's been dropping in rating. People hate it. And yet it received a nomination. Best community support was the role. I don't think to see how that's going to work. Baldur's Gate 3, I think, is also winning that, to be honest. You've also got VR, which is Gran Turismo 7's in the VR category. That's going up against Snaps and Resident Evil Village, though, and Call of the Mountain, which is going to be a bit difficult. Innovation and accessibility. I'm going to have to give that one to probably Hi-Fi Rush. I want to know what you guys, who you think the winners will be in the categories that are mentioned. Who do you think is winning Game of the Year this year? The 6 nominations.
I just want to preface this by, you know, just before I say what I say, that I've been telling people for years that Game of the Year awards don't mean shit for anybody's video game, at least as consumers or gamers go. All that shit is just other people's opinions on what game is the best and what game deserves this or what game deserves that. But also, I feel like you're giving Baldur's Gate 3 way too much credit. Like, that game did okay on PC, but it did not do well on PlayStation as far as sales go. Like, hardly anybody on PlayStation bought that game. Baldur's Gate 3. That's a PC game through and through. That's not a console game. That game did not do so well on the PlayStation, and plus it's also not out on Xbox yet. Whereas,
I mean, the Xbox, games, we did get news of the revealed release date.
It's probably going down on December 7th. It's probably going to be a stealth drop. It's probably going to be like a Game of the Year, like award announcement. That's probably like the day when it's going to go. But as of now, the people who have touched that game, that's a PC game, versus Alan Wake 2, which is also up for the nomination, is everywhere. Spider-Man 2 sold, over 5 million in like 5 days. Mario Wonder is sitting at like 4 or 5 million. The Legend of Zelda is sitting at how much? 10 million or more? So it's like, the amount of people that's going to be voting on these games. And also, that's something else, too. Like that 10% or whatever it is, that's not going to determine what game is going to win. This game is still going to be voted on. I just don't think that Baldur's Gate 3, I think it's an okay game. Like I said, I played that game all the way through. That game definitely had a lot of bugs. People said it on Spider-Man. They said it on Starfield. Baldur's Gate 3 had a lot of bugs.
But you also have to remember the
Baldur's Gate 3 thing, man. But as far as the other games go, like the best RPG game, I don't even again, I don't think that these awards mean anything. But for me, I would put Octopath Traveler 2 up there, and I don't know how that game didn't get any type of award or any type of nominations at all for best soundtrack, at least something, best art style, something. That game didn't get nominated, but I would say I think Baldur's Gate 3 probably has that because the people that like Bethesda games also love Baldur's Gate. Both of those games are really big into the PC crowd. So I think Baldur's Gate 3 is going to win that one, man, if I'm being honest.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think Spider-Man's going to win. You have to remember when these award shows, it's all about vote of perception. And not necessarily they've played all of these games. And there has been calls of people that they're not allowed to vote unless they've played all of them. But there's going to be the perception of Baldur's Gate 3 is the highest rated game of this year. It's had a huge amount of sales. It's done extremely well game, with 100 out of 100.
Baldur's Gate 3 and Tales of the Kingdom both tied for the highest rated game. But again, the people who vote for these games, I don't know if you follow Paris at all. Like Paris Lily, Vicious on Twitter, Paris. Yeah. He went on an Xbox-centric podcast earlier this week, and he said for a fact that he's on the board of people who vote for the game, for, like, the nominees, Greg Miller and Kinda Funny. I don't know exactly who from those podcasts are on the board, but he said Kinda Funny's over there. So, and then, you know, they say that, like, Microsoft, somebody from Microsoft, so maybe Phil Spencer is also on the board. I don't know who else is on the board for, you know, for people to vote for the nominations, but you're right. I don't think a lot of these people ever have touched most of these games, but you got to remember that the gaming media, they are loving Alan Wake 2 right now. They're loving that game. I feel like they love that game more than what they love Baldur's Gate 3.
Yeah, but I think that when it comes to fan voting, because fan voting has started right now, you can go vote. But I do think that it's going to be bound between Baldur's Gate 3 because of the perception and the praise it's had over the years. PlayStation fans, even though they're going to be wanting Spider-Man 2 to win, I do think Baldur's Gate 3 is going to sneak it, simply because of the reaction it's had and the praise it's had. People, even if they haven't played it, are going to go look at what the games have been rated and what game they think deserves it. And they're going to see an indie studio who's had a 97 on PC and 100 out of 100 on console views. And they're going to say, okay, this is the game we're going to vote for. Baldur's Gate 3 has had mainstream praise constantly since the game released. And if it comes down to out the two, I'm going to say Tears of the Kingdom or Baldur's Gate 3, I think it's going to win the award. I don't think Resident Evil 4 Remake, I don't even think Remake should ever be nominated for anything as far as Game of the Year, because it's not a new game. It proved the graphics and then re-released it. I don't think that should even be nominated personally.
Well, RE4 Remake, especially with Capcom. RE2 Remake was nominated back when it released back in 20 whatever it was, and RE4 was nominated because these aren't one-to-one remakes. If you played RE4 Remake back in the day on GameCube, where that was exclusive when it released, before it came out on PS2 years later, or almost a whole year later, and then if you played a new one, there are entire set pieces and entire chapters that are brand new to the game that have not been in the game before. So it's not just a one-to-one remake. I don't agree with it being in there, but when you look at it like that, when you look at the stuff that Capcom actually does, whenever they add stuff into these games, well, into their remakes, to make them feel different versus, you know, when they came out, granted, RE4 Remake isn't that much of a big difference gameplay-wise, but like I said, when you look at it and you compare it to the actual original game, there's a lot of shit that's been put in there. Brand new stuff.
And I do think that's the argument that a lot of people are going to make, but I am going to say that I don't think If anything is ever classed as a remake, then I think they should have it should have been nominated a year. If you re-release something, or if you have a game, for example, like DLC, like Phantom Liberty, I don't think they should have a separate category for DLC. That would be a prime example to put Cyberpunk in there, for example, Phantom Liberty DLC. Have its own category. But you can't have that along with a full game, because that's not fair.
Yeah, I think it would have been better.
You're putting a 20-hour DLC in with a 60-hour game that's a brand new IP or a brand new game. You're putting a DLC against it. I don't think that's right.
Yeah, I think it would have been better if they would have had like a... Because we've been getting a lot of remakes for the past two generations. Even last generation, we've seen a shit ton of remasters and remakes. I think it would be better if Jeff Keighley put like a remake category or like best remaster, best remake or whatever. Because Dead Space remake came out, RE4 remake came out, a whole bunch of stuff came out. So, but again, though, man, I don't think these awards, to me anyways, these awards are just like how I treat reviews from like media. Because I know for a fact that a lot of people that reviewed Baldur's Gate 3 did not beat that game. They did not get to Act 3 because if you went through those reviews, whenever the reviews came out, nobody talked about how buggy Act 3 was, and they did not speak on the later game. Because the later game, Act 3, was absolutely horrendous. I had hard crashes multiple times. I had to manually go in and restart my whole PlayStation because my game would freeze and I couldn't do anything due to some bugs that happened within Act 3 of Baldur's Gate 3. And I think they fixed that now, though.
They have been working.
They fixed it now. Yeah. They fixed it now, but this is, what, 2-3 months down the road. Mm. But that's what I'm saying, though. On review, just like when you heard people talking about Spider-Man 2 and when that game came out, everybody was like, what the hell was these reviews at? How come nobody spoke on these bugs within Spider-Man 2 before the reviews? Baldur's Gate 3 had the same exact shit.
So you finished Baldur's Gate 3, so if I played that game, would I go bald?
You said what?
No, there's no bugs. There isn't as many bugs as there were.
I'm not going to say that you won't have no bugs.
If I finish the game, will I go bald?
Oh, mate, stop with the joke.
You go bald? Oh, you talking about bald? I get it. Yeah, bald. Okay. I mean, I don't know, man, maybe.
Already bald, to be honest.
Like three times over or just one?
You're already bald. What are you talking about?
No, but I don't want to be three times over bald.
You might be, man. Oh, no.
You can't lose any more hair. You haven't got any, dude.
All your chairs here might fall out, man.
Anyway, I want nominations. Who do you think is going to win out of each category? Game of the year.
Game of the year?
Yeah. As much as I want to say Spider-Man 2, I have a feeling it's going to be Zelda. I want to say Spider-Man 2 so much, but I know it's not going to win.
No, I don't see Spider-Man 2 winning. If it wasn't as buggy, it might stand a chance, but there are other people out there.
I don't think it's because of the bugs. I honestly don't think it's because of that. Because I don't know how many... I can't speak for anyone else's experience. But the bugs that I had did not impact my gameplay all that much.
Yeah,
they were all, like really just, like, graphical glitches, and then that was it. I didn't have any bugs that, like, shut the game off. Maybe once. But I think it's just because not enough of people have really played it that aren't the, like, actually that's not true, never mind. I just don't think it's going to win. It's not because of the bugs. I just think that people like Zelda more. People will probably like Baldur's Gate more.
I also love Mario Wonder.
Yeah, Mario Wonder was amazing. But again, we also got to remember.
Mario Wonder's
but we also got to remember, the player's voice is only 10% of the vote, so our votes don't matter anyways. So
who's the other 90% then?
It's like the media.
Media is the ones that made
listen,
it.
Right?
They didn't get listen, to right. vote on their own
listen, list. Right? Listen, right? So let me break it down for you, right? If the 100% of the votes mattered for the players, we wouldn't have our own category titled the Player's Choice Award. Because if that was true, every single nomination would be the Player's Choice Award. The Game of the Year and all the other nominations, our vote only matters 10%.
Yeah, still weird.
Your vote don't matter for shit, Mason.
I do think there's going to be some fallout in later years when these game awards start dropping off. When people actually realise their votes don't mean anything.
Why do you think people put so much... I feel like we need to segue into this, right? I don't know if you got this as a topic, but this should definitely be a topic. Why do you think people, gamers in general, put so much stock into other people's opinion about a video game that they like or they love? You see it happen...
Validation.
...time and time again. Wait. You see it happen time and time again with reviews, right? Let's say you hype for Mario Galaxy 3 or something, right? Mario Galaxy 3 comes out, and it scores a 55 on Metacritic. And you see these people, oh, shit, I'm not buying that now. That game's trash, right? And again, reviews ain't nothing but people's opinions. I can
I feel like gamers as a whole, these game awards, for whoever wins the Game of the Year award and these stupid-ass reviews, feel like people put way too much stock into this stuff.
It's a bit like when I played Yakuza games. I found it amazing, yeah. But there's a lot of critics that are kind of, reducing the score to what I give it.
And Yakuza Fire, by the way, the whole series. Amazing.
There you go, see?
So I've completed all of them. I'm still about halfway through Like a Dragon Gaiden. I will say I'm not a fan of the fact that they keep repeating the city over and over, just change the location once in a while. Yeah. But other than that, yeah, it's a phenomenal game.
I just went about beating people up, man.
Yeah, that's it, man.
Yeah, Gaiden, the man who erased his name. Oh my gosh, man, the combat in that.
You wait till the next one comes out, Infinite Wealth, next year, when you have basically Animal Crossing City.
It felt like a proper fighting game, man. Like, I was just busting out people everywhere. And, like, it reminded me of the 90s, Sega in the 90s, and, when back in the 90s and stuff, when you had the arcade and Naomi boards and all that, and yeah, Shenmue reminds me of all that. So when I was playing these kind of Yakuza games, and then plus you got the arcade games inside as well, and they added Daytona 2 in The Man Who Erased His Name. It's just like, wow. Mind-blowing.
Yeah, but just to get back on topic, Shinobi, why do you think gamers in general put so much stock into the Game of the Year awards or into these dumbass awards? Why do you think people do that? Why do you think people let these awards dictate or misplace their how much they enjoy the game?
I don't think they got control. And plus, you got to realize that they're not like our generation. So a lot of these people are pacifists. Yeah. And then whereas we used to stand up, but nowadays it's more you just accept it. Yeah, well, not us, but that's what they do. So I think they just accept what they're given. And don't forget, everyone's on coke, so their brain's gone anyway.
Ignore Shinobi, not all of you are on cocaine, all right? I will say there is two reasons why the Game Awards exist and people accept the Game Awards. One, it's validation for their own opinion.
Right.
And two, it's the fact that console warring.
Yeah,
it's my game won over your game.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the reason why stuff like the Game Awards and that do well. When you look at other award shows like the DICE Game Awards or the BAFTAs or, you know, the actual People's Choice or, you know, you get all these other shows like the Golden Joysticks, it's not about validation, it's not about console warring, it's about rewarding developers. That's why they're not as big as the Game Awards is, because the Game Awards has become a symbol of the console war and people having crappy opinions about what game they like best. That's why it draws so much numbers and it has so much hype about it.
What about Call of Duty?
Call of Duty's garbage this year, don't I? I've been playing that and
I refuse to acknowledge Call of Duty this year.
No, Modern Warfare 3 should never ever win anything. And
it shouldn't even be talked about again.
That was a flop.
What about the zombie mode? I've been hearing a lot of good things about the zombie mode. What about zombies?
Yeah, so zombies are multiplayer as far as it's very, very good. It's just like Call of Duty, though.
But what about the campaign?
The campaign's like 3 hours.
What? And it's terrible. The lot of the campaign, there is much, about half of the campaign, actually, is just DMC and multiplayer maps, which is basically open combat. You have to run around and do an objective while shooting enemies. It's basically DMZ. There isn't any story to it. It's like, for example, there's one mission where you have to sneak into a silo base and try and deactivate a nuclear warhead. And the whole thing, I swear to God, is just snipe out stealth, get in there, press it, and then survive until they drop the rope. That's DMZ. There is nothing else to the campaign whatsoever. It's one of the most laziest story modes I think Call of Duty has ever done. It's worse than World War II. And me and Callum were having a debate about this, which one was the worst. Modern Warfare 3 is worse. Is the worst Call of Duty game I have ever seen. It's just laziness.
That's crazy.
Yeah. The open missions and stuff where you break into the prison, it was decent. It was a good sign that things were going to go well. There's one where you're on the plane and you have to shoot terrorists and stuff. I did like that as well. I thought that was really good. But then they've broken up with basically multiplayer maps, but without the multiplayer. Zombies is okay. It's not as good as the last year's Zombies, but it's a decent. I thought it was going to be a lot better than what it was. When I was watching the trailers and I was listening to Activision was having conversation, I thought it was going to be like a big fucking RPG at one point. When they were saying about, oh, you have team members and you're going around in trucks, I thought this was going to be an RPG or something with story. It's not. It's just similar Zombies mode, but it's good, but it's not better than last year's. Multiplayer is where it really shines. Multiplayer is brilliant. Loadouts don't carry over, even though it's technically a DLC. You do need Modern Warfare 2 to play Modern Warfare 3, which is a stupid.
Hey, I forgot. Forza Motorsport. What the hell, man? Where's that?
I will get into that. I want to hear your guys' nominations. I want to get this move on because we need to get on with the new stories.
Why isn't that in the nomination? Is it in the nomination?
It is. So I know Bam's given. I know Nightmare's given his. I've given mine. Shinobi, what's yours? Your nomination for Game of the Year.
Who
do you think out of those nominations is going to win?
It's either the Tears of the Kingdom or Forza Motorsport for me.
Forza Motorsport isn't in Game of the Year.
Huh?
Forza Motorsport didn't win Game of the Year. Isn't been nominated for Game of the Year.
Hey, that game's badass, man. I've been ripping
it. It's going up against Alan Wake 2, Baldur's Gate 3, Spider-Man 2, Resident Evil 4 Remake, and Super Mario Bros. Wonder.
Yeah.
So you're going to say Tears of the Kingdom, yeah?
Yeah, I'll say that. How can you not put Forza in the bloody thing, man? So
because not everyone plays Forza. I don't care for Forza. I don't know how many other people care for Forza.
best game direction. The only one missing out of this is obviously Mario's Wonder, but the other remaining five from Game of the Year are all in here.
I need to pull up what games are even on there.
I wrote this down a little bit ago.
I voted like Thursday, I want to say, and I don't remember anything that was on there because I only voted for the games I played.
Well, I'm going to say I do think Baldur's Gate 3 is winning Game of the Year. I know you guys are saying Tears of the Kingdom. I do think Baldur's Gate 3 is probably going to sneak it simply because of the reception. And even though it's not going to outdo Elden Ring, we'll get it wrong. But there has been questions about the Xbox tax, people asking whether it's real or not, and sorry to say it is. This is Major Nelson, who had an interview in 2018 I can't even remember where this was. But he was basically talking about the Xbox as a different set of rules which apply to them as far as reviewing goes and how Xbox has a different measuring stick to PlayStation and Nintendo games. I'm going to play it now for you guys to listen to. Let me know your thoughts are.
Yeah.
I
heard this shit already.
Hold on. Play the video, please.
I think you're not getting the credit you deserve this generation.
We never will.
Yeah.
We never will.
Yeah.
You know, we've seen this. Like, we know that there's a different yardstick for the different developers.
Right.
It's like, we know that there's a different yardstick for the different developers.
Right.
You know, the Nintendo guys are great. They, you know, I've got my Switch right here in case I want to play Fortnite.
Yep.
So, I mean, those guys are great. I talked to Reggie the other day. The guys over at PlayStation, they're doing a great, they're executing. They've had tremendous success this time around. But, you know, it's funny. With us, I think it's maybe because, I don't know. So yeah. I think people are like, oh, I hate Windows because I have to use it at work or I'm doing email or I don't want to do this PowerPoint for work. So I don't know if some of that anxiety and whatnot drifts over to Xbox. But, you know, we just want to do the best we can for gamers. I think you're...
So that's Major Nelson, former face of Xbox consoles. Do you think he's accurate that there is a tax?
Hell no.
I don't know what he's going on about. Oh, people use at work, so therefore they don't like Xbox. I don't know what he's going on about.
I want to know this, Major. Why do you think just because Major Nelson said that shit holds any type of weight?
Because he used to work for Xbox Game Studios, and he was around Xbox.
Exactly. He worked for 25 years. Exactly. He worked for Xbox. He doesn't work for Sony. He doesn't work for Nintendo. I want you to find me Shuhei Yoshida or anybody from Nintendo coming out doing an interview and saying, yeah, you know, we got different yards. The dude, he works for Xbox, and it's known that Xbox isn't putting out – they're not putting their best foot forward in regards to gaming. They put out shit like Redfall, buggy, yeah. A buggy
that guy last got better.
They put out Starfield. Starfield was still a buggy mess, even after a year off and a year being delayed. It still comes out buggy.
I think Starfield got an award.
Starfield is up for best RPG. Yeah. Starfield, but Shinobi, Starfield is being nominated for a reward. It's not like it isn't being nominated at all. It's just not into the Game of the Year awards, which is why all these fanboys are coming out. I mean, it was so many other games that also missed out on Game of the Year. Jedi Survivor was a fire game. It's not being nominated. FF16 was decent. It's not being nominated. Octopath Traveler 2 was fire. It's not being nominated.
Are we talking about games not being nominated for Game of the Year? Or just
that's exactly what this is about, Nightmare. This is about Xbox fanboys feeling.
I'm sorry. I was making sure that like we weren't just talking in general. They weren't nominated for anything. I'm sorry.
Again, Starfield got nominated for an award. This is legit. Yeah. Just Xbox fanboys being butthurt because Starfield is not up for Game of the Year.
Yeah, but did it get crap as Game of the Year award or what they put?
I mean, but Starfield is currently in the running for a nomination for the BAFTAs, which arguably is the bigger award show. You don't get really bigger than an Academy Award.
Nothing is bigger than Jeff Keighley's Game Award. The BAFTAs would not be viewed and they would not be seen as much as Jeff Keighley's Game of the Year Award.
Not as far as players go, but when it comes to the actual industry, the BAFTAs, you don't get bigger than the Academy Awards. It is the number one worldwide award show.
Again, if you put both of them side by side and look to see who's going to tune in to watch what, the Game of the Year Awards, Jeff Keighley's BGAs, is going to stomp all over that. So even if it's good for the industry, that doesn't mean anything because, again, these are the Game of the Year awards. The people that push these games forward and even make these games even be possible is the gamers. I could care less about what some damn developers think about what should win and what shouldn't win. That doesn't matter. I'm a consumer. I'm a gamer. I'm not a developer. I get it. You are a developer, and yes, it hits different for you. I know it hits different for you. But the truth of the matter is, again, Jeff Keighley's Game of the Year award show is going to stomp that show out everywhere. It's not even going to be a competition.
I mean, the Academy Awards usually get something like 50 million views. And last year's Game Awards viewership, I believe, was about 8.5-9 million.
Major, you can go Google it and see which one got the most views. I'm telling you right now.
Yeah, I will go look. But the Academy Awards usually get 50-60 million
per year. This is going to be like the 10th time that I tell you to go Google something or like double check something, and you're going to be like, you know what, you was right. Because every time the Game of the Year Awards come out, and every time they do it, they come out on Twitter, and then they brag about how they were the biggest show and how much views they got. They do it every year.
Wow.
But anyways, I'm just saying, man, that like that old Xbox tax thing, that shit is not real. Because Hi-Fi Rush came out, and it got what on Metacritic, at 88 or something? I feel like everybody thinks every Xbox game should just score 90 and above, when that's not true.
Well, what would you say then to people like Paris and Post Up?
Why do you reference Post Up? Post Up is a Twitter lawyer. Nothing he says holds any more weight than anybody else. Paris, that's the truth. Post Up ain't nobody in the industry.
I mean, you've got people like Grid and others, all the Xbox accounts saying, yes, it's real in a way.
Of course they're going to say it, Major, because all these big Xbox accounts are nothing more than Xbox fanboys accounts.
I'm not talking just about the awards, but I'm also talking about the review process. And there's issues with, like, IGN, who is, and I know this is hard for some people to get and for some people to grasp and some people to accept, that IGN is a PlayStation-focused outlet, and they always have been. You just need to look at who their owners are. Ziff Davidson, for example, previously ran PlayStation Gaming Magazine. It's now Play Magazine. They have shares in Sony Interactive. They have members of their board who are members of Sony. And they own IGN. That is uncategorically. And if you have to even ask why, for example, IGN would be even remotely PlayStation focused, and everyone thinking they're not. You just have to look at their review for the PS Portal. Now, their review for the Steam Deck got a 7, all right? The Steam Deck. I personally don't agree with it, but 7, 8. Some people, that's going to be fair. That's fine. Pierce Portal, they gave an 8. So the Pierce Portal, if you look, watch their video review, and I have got a link of it for you guys to watch.
I've seen it already.
The whole list.
I've seen it already, Major. I've seen it already because I've seen the same fan. I don't even know why you brought this to the podcast, but I've seen the same fan. I've seen the same fanboy point brought up all week. Again, IGN reviewed the thing.
Hold on, wait, because
I'm about to put some nuance. I'm about to put some context into what you just brought up in here, because again, this is a fanboy point. This is a fanboy argument. I've been seeing it all week. So the nuance, or it's the context with these reviews, is this. IGN reviewed the Steam Deck for what the Steam Deck does across the board. The Steam Deck isn't out and is not boasting to be a remote play device. It's out to be a handheld PC, and they reviewed it as such for everything that it does, for every little box that it checks and every little box that it does not check. The PlayStation Portal came out and they told you specifically a dozen times, this is a remote play device, nothing more, nothing less. They reviewed it for what it is. They reviewed it for a remote play device. Not so, it's like whenever y'all bring up these reviews, it's like y'all bringing up these reviews and y'all trying to compare them, but these reviews are not comparable. That's just like the other dumbass fanboy point that I've seen. People are like, yo, they gave this PS Portal a higher review than what they gave Starfield. And I'm like, bro.
Yeah, I don't think that's
it's not the same. The PS Portal should not be compared to the Steam Deck because it's not boasting or even, it's not even half of powerful is what the Steam Deck is. It's nothing more than a remote play device.
I mean, it's also the fact it has no Bluetooth. The battery life when you're playing the game lasts about 2 hours. If you want it to get longer, you have to turn off vibration. You have to turn off sound. The only way for you to actually be able to hear anything is to buy $200 specific Sony headphones. And then apparently you can also have wired, but
there's a wired headphone jack.
Yes, yeah. Yes, but that's what I'm saying. So for somebody like you, I don't know if you actually use Remote Play. I use Remote Play. I've beaten and platinum multiple games on Remote Play. I've got 1,000 out of 1,000 achievements on Xbox games via Remote Play. I'm not using Remote Play for 8 hour sessions. I use Remote Play just to hop on, jump on, play a game for a couple minutes, maybe 30, 45 minutes. That's what it's for. So the battery life, that doesn't matter because, again, nobody should be using Remote Play or is intending to use Remote Play to substitute.
Let me ask you a question then, Bam. Would you say someone like, for example, Mudaha is a PlayStation fan account? Or would you say he's on the board, on the verge of being?
I don't even know who that is.
Mudaha.
I'm not talking about the Game Awards anymore.
Huh?
I feel like now each of us are just arguing about whether.
Well, we're not talking about the Game Awards no more, no, Nightmare. No. We're talking about the Xbox tax.
Yeah. Okay. I wanted to know. Do you know who
Mudaha is? I'm ordering
games. The Indian guy on YouTube does usually like hacking and stuff accounts, but he has got a video. He did a live stream yesterday, which covered the new PS Portal and the IGN review. And the thing is when. If you look at IGN's review guide, and we have a similar guide, and we've crafted ours specifically to say, okay, if there is a negative, it drops the score. IGN's review, their whole video review is negative after negative after negative after negative after this is terrible, this is a negative. Every single point they make is not good. And then they give it an 8 at the end. Now, going through their review guide, every single, if they're giving something a negative point, then it should drop the score. But they've given the whole 14-minute video is nothing but negatives.
Yeah, but that's the thing about reviews.
A single positive.
But that's the thing about reviews.
A single positive in our whole video.
But that's the thing about reviews. If you review anything, and if you point out negatives, people are like, well, how come that's not dropping the review? If everybody did that, every single review would be a 2 or a 3.
No,
you would have no eight, when
we review a game, if this, for example, if something's buggy, right, and it has issues with bugs, then it loses half a star. Like, we don't drop it because it has more than one bug. We drop it because there is bugs.
But you do have a star. So again, for example, I don't know what you gave Starfield.
We gave Starfield, I believe, an 8. I think it was an 8. It might have been a 9. Mainly because of the bugs.
I thought y'all do 4 out of 5 stars.
Yeah. With 4, technically 5 stars, would be half because it's half a star as well.
So if we looked at stars, Starfield has way more problems than just bugs. That's not the only issue with Starfield. Again, if you look at any reviewer and look at how anybody reviews anything, if you take points off or half a star off, you're going to end the review with two stars out of five, a 2 out of 10, a 3 out of 10. That just doesn't make sense to me. You're not going to say, okay, well, you know, even though it has negatives, again, you have to look at what it does good, what is it saying it's going to do, and what could be better or what is bad with something. You don't review something and then you just, if you have negatives, okay, well, since I got five negatives, that's 5 points off. So that's now, this is going to be a 5 out of 10. Because if every review worked that way, everything would be reviewed low.
I mean, if there is multiple issues, then yeah, there'd be 5 out of 10. We do have a review guide, if you guys would like to go see how we review games. But we look at five key points, and it's usually gameplay, graphics, audio, controls, if there's bugs, and story. So actual, what you're actually going to be experiencing. And throughout that review, if something's broken, for example, if you get, say, for example, the game takes too long to grind and get everything, that's half a point off because it's too long, it's too complicated, it takes you out of the enjoyment. We're giving reasons why people should go out and buy this thing, why you should go out and spend your money to go buy this game. If the game is busted and it doesn't work, then you're obviously going to score low. With the PS Portal, I know Callum bought a copy and he was just saying, yeah, but this is the sort of thing if you go to a hotel. How many times are you going to go to a hotel just to play your PS5? Most of the time, you're just going to be going upstairs or downstairs, whichever place your PS5 is not in.
Right, did he buy it?
He bought it, yeah.
Does he like it?
He said it's okay. But he's going, mate, you should spend £200 so you can go to a hotel and keep playing your PS5. Why would I go specifically to hotels
and to play my PS5? You can't use that thing in a hotel anyways, because if you go to hotels, at least in America, when you go to hotels, you got to sync up to the hotel Wi-Fi. You have to go through the internet. The PlayStation Portal does not have an internet browser, so that it wouldn't work at a hotel. But again, this thing was marketed as a home device. It's a remote play device.
If you've got a PS5, I mean, it's like freeing up your TV, basically, was the point.
That's what they say. But,
thing that they advertised it as, though?
That's what they said, though, Nightmare, and that's what I'm saying. Like, they've already advertised it as what it's supposed to be.
And I think that's a lot of places that's the reason they've given it that score, is because it's completely useless.
Because he's got his own room, his TV, yeah, and he said he wanted to buy one. I said, what do you want to buy one for? Like, no one's hogging up your TV because you're the only one who watches it.
I wouldn't buy one of these at all because, again, most people in 2023 have more than one TV in their house, especially gamers.
He said he wouldn't play it in his bed, but he can see his TV from his bed.
Shinobi, that's exactly what we've been telling people online forever. Like, I've been telling people, I don't agree with anybody buying this at all, but I'm not going to sit up here and say that IGN has an Xbox taxing play because they scored something or they reviewed something well. Xbox has had multiple games reviewed by IGN that have been reviewed well. So it's like, what do you want them to do? Just review every Xbox game a 10 out of 10 across the board going forward? That's what I'm trying to figure out for people that believe in Xbox tax. What do we want them to do going forward for Xbox?
But I just think. But you know what? Going back to Xbox in comparison, I have to say the remote play with the Xbox is excellent.
That shit is dope, right? It's fire.
Yeah, it's really good because I use the controller for that. And I use the iPad Mini because when the iPad Mini come out, they said it's a perfect streaming device for Xbox. Yeah, so I tried it.
I'll play it on my phone, to be honest. I'll get the
game. iPad Mini is a big screen, yeah? But it's small. So you can prop it up, have your controller, bam, I play Halo Infinite. Oh, my gosh, that was...
But what do you think, Shinobi, about the Xbox tax? What do you think that's real or do you think that's not real? What do you think about the Xbox tax?
Also, by the way,
Xbox tax is nothing more than another name for media bias. The Xbox fanboys... They was out crying about this last generation. Now they moved it to this generation, and now it's called the Xbox tax. I just wanted to let you know that before you go.
I just think it's the same as Sony for me. So I see discounts and stuff on the Xbox anyway. But normally I try.
No, we're not talking about actual tax.
We're talking about Xbox media bias.
Oh,
we're talking about Xbox media bias.
I thought you said inflation price.
That's what the fanboys is calling it, man. But yeah, but it's just Xbox media buy.
Are they brain damaged?
The argument is that Microsoft have like a bite that the media is biased against Xbox and they don't like Microsoft.
Yeah, but how does
review Sony games so highly and give Microsoft no credit at all?
Yeah, but how does
that's the argument.
The word tax is financial. So how the hell does
it's just the name. It's just the name. It's just the verb.
Let me break it down to you, Shelby, right? So, you know, whenever you go to the store and then you buy something and then they put that tax on there, like 25 cent, 50 cent tax to whatever you buy.
Fanboys
are saying that anytime a game comes out, you have to deduct 10 points off the review automatically because it's an Xbox game. Why it has that name.
Yeah, but they do the same with Nintendo, man.
That's what I'm saying, though. So it's like, I don't understand why Xbox fanboys just can't put it through their brain, right? The media loves these casual movie type of games that Sony's putting out. That's the flavor of the week right now, right? But you have Phil Spencer who's been sitting on his ass for two generations saying, and I quote, "I don't want to make Xbox version games or PlayStation games." If you know that the media and the consumers want something, give them what they want.
I must say that when you got games that are more like movies, they're all the same. But I do love all three of my consoles for their uniqueness. So I like I love Halo Infinite, I love Gears of War, I love Forza, but then I love Gran Turismo, I love Uncharted, I love Spider-Man, I love, you know, loads of games on Sony, and then Ratchet and Clank, and then with Nintendo, Mario Wonder, Zelda, Mario Kart, all of that, Splatoon, you know. So I'm lucky because I can experience all three, and I'm not really. Right.
But you're a normal gamer, though, Shinobi. Like, you got a brain. Some of these dudes online, they only want to play on one plastic box, and their plastic box of choice is Xbox. So let me ask you. Let me put it like this. Theoretically, if you was one of them brain-dead fanboys online and you could only have an Xbox because that's what you chose, you believe green, you love the Xbox ecosystem, you love Phil Spencer more than your own daddy. If this was the case, Shinobi,
actually,
and you heard Phil Spencer say that.
My dad.
Okay, but look, so if you heard Phil Spencer say that, right? Say that we don't want to give the gamers, because people have been begging. The Xbox fanboys have been begging for a Marvel superhero game because Sony has Spider-Man. They've been saying, how come Xbox don't go out and get a Marvel deal and give them like a Blade game, a Punisher game? They've been begging for this stuff. But again, Phil Spencer is sitting on his hands. And he's already said, we're not going to give you what you want. But they're going to keep putting out games like, or they're going to keep greenlighting games like Redfall. They're going to keep greenlighting the same Halo, Gears, and Forza. They're going to keep telling you, we hear you, we hear you, we hear you, because we've been hearing this shit since last generation. Every time Xbox messes up and then they don't release games or good quality games, we hear you, we hear you, we hear you. We are listening to the fans, but then they don't give you what you want. What would you say to that?
Well, I'd be kind of pissed. I mean, I remember with Nintendo, the same shit is that them too. So, but now they do listen. So, I'll be kind of pissed, man. Like, but for me, if I was just Xbox, I would kind of still want my Halo, Gears of War, Forza, all that, Killer Instinct. I still want all those base games, but I would like original projects, but I would like something that's not buggy or, you know, some beta testing shit. I want a game.
Right.
I would like to see them actually do more RPGs, first-party RPGs. They have, when they bought Activision, they have, I think, three or four big RPGs from the last generation, like Prototype, True Crime. They have been teasing they're going to be releasing a new Spyro game pretty soon. Spyro has been starting to creep up in other games like the Crash Team Rumble, which is a game that should be dropped immediately. That's going absolutely nowhere. But bring out a new Spyro game. They have been teasing that for a while. But as far as their lineup, I mean, Starfield, I love Starfield. I'm 500 hours in and I'm still playing it. I enjoy it.
You're playing it?
Yeah, I love Starfield. I mean, you have to. The new game plus is basically it changes the game every time you start, and there's about 10 different versions, so you have to play 10 different times. But the game can go on and on. You've got mod support launching in February next year. They're about to bring out their new DLC, Shattered Space. That's coming out early next year as well. There's going to be at least another 5-6 years of DLC roadmap that is in the works for Starfield. That game's never going to end. It's going to go on until Elder Scrolls 6.
Did you hear what you just said?
What?
You just said a whole bunch of stuff is coming, but when is it coming?
that's the problem with Microsoft.
No, but this goes hand in hand to what we are talking about, because this whole Xbox act comes from Starfield not being nominated for Game of the Year 2023. Mod support, where is it? Not in 2023. DLC, where is it? Not in 2023.
Well, the game only released last month, so.
So that's what I'm saying, though. Again, Starfield would be a better game if it came with all that stuff. If all this stuff wasn't coming in 2024, you can't put out another Bethesda game.
Spider-Man launched with New Game Plus.
Spider-Man is not an RPG. So I don't need Spider-Man to have a new game plus. I don't need to have a new game plus.
Also, can we use it came out just last month as an excuse when there are multiple games that came out like a couple weeks ago on there.
That's what I'm saying, though. But again, I'm just trying to put it through because Major's been sipping on the Kool-Aid lately. I can tell by his talking points. He's been sipping on the Kool-Aid, and he's bringing these talking points up. But I'm here to dismantle every single one of them talking points, because not only have I played Starfield, and I enjoy Starfield, the problem with Starfield is this. It's not Fallout 4 caliber. It's not better than Fallout 4. It's not better than Skyrim. This is Bethesda's weakest RPG game to date.
I'd have to beg to disagree. I think it's better than Skyrim. Skyrim's been going off for
definitely
so long.
Definitely not.
You have to remember Skyrim has been re-released on every platform for the last three generations.
Yeah, but why is that?
In the mid-2000s.
But why is that, Major?
Because they didn't have another game in the works. So
wrong.
They decided re-releasing Skyrim.
Wrong.
Skyrim, a new platform.
Wrong, because
and
Skyrim came out, guess what?
Skyrim did not launch until after, post-launch. There was no mod support when Skyrim it came 6 months after.
We're getting mod support
for Starfield 3 months after it released.
That's not the point. Skyrim,
middle of January, early February.
That's not the point. Skyrim, to this day, is still being played because of how great that game is, regardless if it had mod support or not. People love that game.
People want to play it for a platinum because there's so much going on.
It's not even about the platinum.
They love Zelda. They love the world. So the Skyrim world is unforgettable to it.
That's exactly it, Kenobi. People love Skyrim because of that world. Starfield was doomed to not be as good as Fallout or Skyrim from the jump because the way how they built that world is not the same. It's generated. So none of that tender love and care that people got with Starfield when you run up somewhere and then you run over a mountaintop and then you find an abandoned shack. The world has its own storytelling. Starfield is not that.
Starfield is procedurally generated for large planets. So, for example, so not all of every world you visit is procedurally generated.
Like New Atlantis and stuff like that. We both know that, but you shouldn't have to say that.
You're going to have random planets out there. For example, the way the world works, way the game works as far as development goes, when you land on an area, all right, the AI will then create the world around you within a specific spot. Usually it's about 3, 4, 5 spawn points.
And that's trash.
But that's how a lot of open world games work. Because if you have multiple locations, you cannot expect developers, right? We wouldn't have got Starfield for the next 150 years if you asked them to hand draw and make every single planet. Whose fault is that?
Is that my fault? Is that your fault?
No Man's Sky. No Man's Sky is the same thing.
No Man's Sky was absolute dog shit. That game is not a good game either.
No Man's Sky is actually vastly better. That game is good today.
That game is good today. Everybody in here knows how that game launched. We're not about to sit here and pretend that No Man's Sky launched. Great.
That was a bad game when it launched. Terrible.
That game was absolute dog shit.
That game was rubbish. now, where is now? They've kept their promise.
The game is good now. Exactly what I'm saying. But again, Skyrim and Fallout 4 are some of Bethesda's best games. Fallout 3, some of Starfield's best games because of how they built that world. Again, New Atlantis and other worlds that are like the words that you have to go to, of course, those words are handcrafted. But it is nothing in comparison to what Skyrim or what Fallout 4 is. And plus, also, that base story was absolute trash. It was garbage.
You have to keep playing through multiple New Game Pluses.
Ain't nobody going to keep playing through multiple New Game Pluses, maybe.
I am.
Nobody's going to do that.
I'm about six playthroughs in. There are people that are still playing it now.
Yeah.
The amount of content you'll find in Starfield is about 10 times larger than what you'll find in any of previous Bethesda games, including Skyrim or Fallout 4.
And also, too, that's not 100% true, because after you beat the game one time and you jump into for like the next New Game Plus, just because I get to have a new ship and just because a few dialogue options has changed, the game is still the same. The game is not a drastic change of a game.
It does keep changing.
It changes a little bit, Major. We're talking about
you're not playing the whole. It's because you're not playing the whole game all the way through. You're playing parts of like the main story.
Yeah.
And things have changed because this is a new universe.
Things haven't changed, Major. I said that it's not as drastic as what you're trying to make it out to be.
It's
that's
not
what I'm saying.
Yes, but that's because they haven't released a DLC yet. When the DLC is meant to change up the New Game Plus and create new stories. They have got a serious amount of work still to go for it, granted. There is a lot of work still to go into Starfield. But that's because the game is meant to be played and developed over multiple years. If you, for example, people complaining about the fact that everything's procedurally generated and there are multiple planets with nothing on, that's because it's AI-based. So the fact that they're having to release that game, if you ask them to handcraft every world or create new cities and multiple cities across the entire universe, 1,000 planets, it's going to take them hundreds of years just to get that done. So that's the reason why they added AI procedural generation, is because it allows them to make a game where there is to that scale. And the fact that it's running so many processes, and the fact that there are so many side missions and so much content included, and secret missions, you're not going to be able to find just by, you have to walk around and listen to people speaking. And then you'll stop, then it will give you a mission. That doesn't happen.
That's why, Major, I asked you earlier when you said that. Whose fault is that? Bethesda has been making games for almost 20 plus years, right? They've been making games forever. So if they know they try to do this 1,000 planet stuff, and if they know that only 100 planets out of that 1,000 are going to have life on them, or going to have outposts on them, or a lot of stuff on them for you to go out and find and do.
No, life, not outposts. Life.
Life, outposts, on whatever. Life, outpost, whatever. If they knew this before they started development, if they knew that this stuff was going to be there, right, it's not my problem that the DLC is going to be there and it's going to fix some of these issues. But this is my point about this whole Xbox tax bullshit, is that people are saying this Xbox tax is here because Starfield didn't make it the game of the year. But again, if me and you can admit that Starfield is not inside the best place that it should be, because you just said that yourself.
Yeah,
if me and you can both admit that, how come everybody else is out here screaming and hooting and hollering and crying because this game isn't up for some opinion award? Because again, these awards don't mean shit. How come nobody else can admit it?
And console warring.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, how come
validated? There is a need for validation because of the fact that Xbox has. At least for this year. Last year was god-awful. The year before was even worse. But for this year, at least, they released 3, maybe 4 games that some people feel that should be getting some credit in some form or fashion. Hi-Fi Rush is getting 5 award nominations. But none of them are in Game of the Year competition, which is what people don't care about, best audio score or best game direction or whatever. People don't give a crap about those other awards. They want Game of the Year. Game of the Year is the only one.
Do you think Hi-Fi Rush deserves Game of the Year?
I think it should be an award for it where it matters, because a lot of people aren't paying attention to the other awards. They don't care about who won Developer of the Year. They want to know Game of the Year. And
but
I
you
think
both,
Hi-Fi Rush is fantastic.
But you just
a brilliant game.
But you just said for yourself that these awards mean nothing. They're just for console war talking points, and it's just console war fodder. So why do you care so much? If you know that these awards mean nothing, why do you think it deserves something that matters?
Because it's credit from the industry for the fact that that game has done something. It's worth an award. It's worth the praise. There are developers out there and there are publishers out there who want to be at the Game Awards because it is the largest, the largest industry, and I use that in quotations, the largest industry award show. There are going to be people out there, that developers and publishers, that want the recognition. For them, all those awards matter. They all want to be nominated in something.
So there's other award showcases for them to go watch and for them to care about then.
Yeah. There is nobody, majority of gamers themselves aren't paying attention to the BAFTAs and the Golden Joysticks. I mean, the Golden Joysticks was last month. Congratulations to Thomas Seller, by the way. But there are a number of developers who are paying attention mainly to the Game Awards because it is the most watched industry, quotations, event award show out there. So they're paying attention to it more. They want to be nominated in everything.
But let me just say this. And then
the gamers, though, the Game of the Year is the only thing that matters because it's
validation,
the console warring.
Well, let me say this, and then I'm going to shut up, right? I'm going to let Nightmare Shinobi go, right? If a game developer gets an award at the Golden Joysticks, or they win an award at the Baptist, or if they win an award at DICE, and if that's not enough for them, and if they still crying over Jeff Keighley's show not nominating them or giving them their quote-unquote just deserves, then that's tough titty. Because if you can win something somewhere else, and if that's not enough for you because not enough eyes was on it, then you don't deserve shit anyways.
No, I have been saying this repeatedly for the last week. Right, and people can go check my comment feed. It's still got the BAFTAs. There's still other award shows. Game of the Year is not important whatsoever. And I will agree with you, Bam. It is a pointless waste of time when your vote doesn't matter. There are other award shows out there. If my game ever releases and I get nominated on anything, I'm happy. What I do want is a BAFTA award because that is my national. That's my national award ceremony that I want to be invited to. I want an award there. But as far as the game awards, I mean, for people, for the big publishers, for the big platforms, it means a lot. It means a lot to be nominated at the game awards. Even though it's just an opinion base, a lot, I don't think that they should, the way the awards set up is right. I don't think you should be giving the nominations to press. And the reason they do that is because press obviously play all the games throughout the year. But you're giving it to a lot of also console-focused reviewers and a lot of console-focused, like Xbox magazines in there. And they're getting nominations. But there's other, like PC game. Like, you've got basically console-focused magazines. A lot of them are owned by the same companies, like Repop owns VGC and PC Gamer and Eurogamer. There's going to be companies out there that are focused more towards one console, like IGN. Really, they shouldn't be the people that nominate. It should come down to the fans. They should select a bunch of fans, people that submit every year. We'd like to be ones that do the nominations. It shouldn't come down to press because press has already given their opinion on games. They then shouldn't get the final say as well. I 100% agree with that point. I think it's wrong that you're giving the opinions of people who have already had a chance to give their opinion on it. You should draw a line with a neutral party who can actually vote and give their nominations without there being any bias whatsoever. And there is bias in the industry. This is 100% factual. There is bias in the industry. You just got to go look at any like Windows Central, the Xbox, IGN is PlayStation, Eurogamer is just nobody. They don't care about any games. They slag off everything. But there is people out there that are going to be focused more on one console and giving their biased opinion on it. This happens all the time.
If we know they're biased, right? Again, this is why I've been saying this shit forever, for years, for over a decade. Why do gamers continue to care so much about these reviews from these reviewers and from the industry of people who are biased? I don't care who's making the review. I don't care about who's making the review.
It's console warring. It's validation for their own opinion. If you, for example, say if an Xbox fan suddenly reads a review from, say, Windows Central, and it backs up their thoughts on the game, they're going to go, look, this is right. This guy said it. He's in the industry, therefore he knows, and I'm right, therefore it's I'm right and you're wrong.
So it's a constant.
You're looking for validation for your own opinions. That's why there's so many, like, Central, like J-Dub is one of the biggest Sony ponies going ever. If you read any of his accounts, he's constantly recycling the same Sony points, even though most of the time he's wrong. But he'll just say the same thing because he's someone else who's a PlayStation reviewer has also said the same thing. So therefore, he's seeking validation for his point because somebody else in the industry has already said it.
Again, though, but this is what I'm saying, though. If we understand that it's nothing but a hamster wheel, why do we keep continue crying about media bias, Xbox tax? why are we even talking about this stuff if we already know that it's just a hamster wheel and that these reviews mean nothing because these reviewers are biased and they're just trying to prove a point, whether it be political or not, because again, Hogwarts Legacy didn't receive no nomination.
Yeah, that's
the best tough. And that right there was probably one of the best games, well, not the best game, but it performed the best out of any game.
I love Hogwarts Legacy. I had so much fun with that game, 100% of it.
But again, though, Major, we understand that it didn't get nominated for political reasons because of J.K. Rowling. So again, this is why I've been said the Game of the Year Awards don't mean shit. It's nothing but opinions because these people aren't being, if they was being like real, 100% genuine, Hogwarts Legacy would be in these talks inside almost all these nominations.
Yeah, I will also make the point that the Game of the Year nomination, besides Baldur's Gate 3, all the other games nominated have all come out within the last few months. It's not including, obviously, Tears of the Kingdom. But then you look back and you got, like, exactly Hogwarts Legacy, that released in, what, February? I didn't get a single nomination. That game was the most played game on Steam all year. People were still playing it. It had a massive, huge fan base. What exactly is the criteria for these award shows? Because you've got games that are stretched back from January, February, you didn't even see a licking. They didn't get anything. But then you've got Mario Bros. Wonder. Even though that game's good, it is not Game of the Year material. I don't care if anyone says, I've played it. I know, Shinobi, you've played it. I know you're a Nintendo fan anyway. But
it's not even about a fan, yeah? The game is sick. And it's innovative.
I would say a good 8. I wouldn't say it's a masterpiece.
It's got challenge, it's hardcore, it pushes the limit of 2D.
Yeah, but Game of the Year nomination?
It reinvents 2D. I wouldn't give it Game of the Year, but I'd nominate it next
year. I wouldn't even nominate it, dude. I think it's on the cusp of being nominated, but I wouldn't say it's worthy of a nomination.
But hold on, you played it at the show, but I bought it, man. Played the proper game.
I've also bought it. It's not Game of the Year.
When did you buy it?
Like a couple of weeks ago.
I didn't know. Why didn't you tell me, man? What's wrong with you?
Because I haven't touched my Switch, dude. I've just also got a PS5 in the last few months.
I've been rinsing.
Oh, I've been on that repeatedly. I'm playing through all the back catalogue of my PS4. I didn't finish.
That's the best game since a 2D Mario game since Mario World on the Super Nintendo. Yeah. So this game is sick, man. I went in thinking it might not be. Yeah. But I say, like, I was kind of skeptical. Yeah. Because of another 2D Mario game. I was fed up. Yeah. But when I actually played that game, I was blown. Mind blown. My brain, my jaw lit the floor, man. And when I was like playing that game, I couldn't stop playing it. I was finding secret areas that my brethren in Morocco, he's got some Facebook community thing, yeah? So he was playing it at the same time as me, and we was just, but he's a graphic artist, well, 3D animator, and he was so blown away, man.
Yeah, like, send him my way, dude. We need more animators and stuff.
It was so, like, we were both in awe, man, like, with that game, yeah? And then I'm finding shit that he didn't know existed. I didn't know it existed. I found it accidentally. But I have to say, wow, man, I was just in absolute shock. I was in shock. Do you know what I mean? I just couldn't believe it. So the game deserves way more. It's not an 8 out of 10 game, especially coming from a platforming background. You know, I mean, I love Metroid and...
I would say an 8. I wouldn't give it. I wouldn't. I'd say it's on the cusp of being nominated, but it's not nomination worthy. If there was a game to replace it, I'd say Hogwarts Legacy should be replaced.
The best. If it's the best 2D Mario game,
I also wouldn't say that Marvel Spider-Man should be Game of the Year nominated either. That game is buggy. Oh, okay. It is too short.
But I have to say that Mario Wonder is a finished game. On launch, it was a big game.
It's a beautiful looking game. It's a brilliant 2D Mario, but I don't think it should have been nominated.
Bro, it's the best.
Tears of the Kingdom, absolutely.
No, this is the best. I'm torn between the two games, but this is the best Mario game since Super Mario World on that's a Japanese name, on the Super Famicom or Super Nintendo, yeah?
So, Super Nintendo.
Super Famicom in Japanese area. So, basically, for this to top that game, yeah, it can't do lower than 9 out of 10.
I think it definitely deserves to be up there for Game of the Year because, again, when you look at what makes a Game of the Year, quote-unquote Game of the Year contender, you look at it, it came out quality, it came out finished, it came out the soundtrack, yeah, the sound style.
What do you want?
Everything that constitutes a game being a quote-unquote Game of the Year contender, it checked every single box. Jedi Survivor did not come out finished. It did not come out inside a quality state.
No.
Starfield did not come out inside a quality state. It did not come out finished. It came out super messed up. Spider-Man 2 had bugs, but again, just like Nightmare said earlier, it did not have ground or game-breaking bugs inside the game. Alan Wake 2 had groundbreaking game bugs inside the game. There's Reddit posts and Reddit forums about it, about people not being able to beat that game because they had to restart because they ended up getting to a bug that made them restart their game because they could not progress further. So, I mean, out of all the games that shouldn't be up there, I think Alan Wake 2, again, that game just came out, what, 2-3 weeks ago? I don't even know how the hell that even got into the conversation. It ain't been on the stove hot enough. It legit just came out.
I mean, they did this last year. They delayed the Game Awards nominations for the fact that they got before Ragnarok so they could get that onto the list. Yeah, even before it came out, they were saying, yeah, this is going to be a nomination. We just have to wait for it to release first.
They would never do that with Nintendo. They never do that with Nintendo.
That game
should have
been on the list then, maybe.
It shouldn't be on the list. There should be a cut-off point. But they say, oh, yeah, it's December 6th, right up until... How can you nominate something? It's like the day before they announce the nominations, they're allowing games to be added. Like, it's just stupid.
Yeah.
This is why I say the Game Awards is just nonsense, because they do this sort of thing. Where, like, last year, they waited until God of War Ragnarok released. Because they knew it was the people it was going to sell well. Even though the game had not released and nobody had played it yet, they were still waiting for the game to be announced before they announced the nomination so they could slot it in. That is just disgusting. They should have delayed
in Ragnarok's defense, though, it is a masterpiece.
It is, but I don't think they delayed the nominations.
We not about to do this. Ragnarok is not a masterpiece. It's not even better than God of War 2018. Let me tell you why. Hang on. Let me say what I mean. Go ahead.
Ragnarok is a storytelling masterpiece. I don't care. Like, gameplay, I didn't really care for it. But if, like, and I care more about story than I do gameplay sometimes.
Yeah, we call it cool that things that...
I'm about to break your legs. Now, let me tell you why, right? I was about to tackle the whole story point. God of War 2018, they spent the entire time hyping you up to see Thor, hyping you up to see Odin, right? Right? They hyped this up. They made these people seem like they was going to be bigger than Zeus, bigger than Hades. Number one, this new franchise doesn't even come close to the original trilogy. That's number one. But again, this attack with Ragnarok and the whole storytelling shit, right? They rushed the story in Ragnarok. There's no reason why you should have seen the Allfather a handful of times. There's no reason why we should have fought Thor once or twice. That's absolute bogus to me. They hype these characters up for you to only see them a handful of times, and then they kill them off? Come on, bro. Negative. They rushed that story.
I will wonder.
Well, you can think that. You can think that Ragnarok's still one of my favorite games I've ever played.
I mean, I'm not trying to change your mind, Nightmare, at all. Not at all. I'm just, you know, this is a podcast. We're talking about games. Yeah. If you say something, I don't agree with it. Hey, man, we got the podcast. Got a podcast, brother.
That's true. I will say if something is a masterpiece, then it has to be 100% a masterpiece. It can't be the story's great, but the gameplay's terrible.
And the story wasn't even great. I mean, it doesn't even touch the original. I prefer the original God of War. None of these God of War games is touching God of War 3, Major. None of them.
No. I'm 100% on that one. The original God of War trilogy was fire. But anyway, we got to jump move on because we do have to get to deals of the week. We've been speaking for over an hour on this. Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic remake has been cancelled, according to Jeff Grubb. They heads down Friday morning during the Game Mess morning show. During the 57-minute mark, the game is not being worked on in any way, shape, or form. Originally announced back in 2021, it was supposed to be next year's big PS5 release. It was first in development by Aspyr Media. Embracer then shifted the game over to Saber Interactive early middle of last year. During the show, Grubb also mentioned that since moving away from Aspyr, Saber Interactive has done absolutely nothing with it. The only thing that has happened recently is the scrubbing of social media and YouTube by Sony removing mentions of the game simply because they're trying to backtrack on everything that was previously announced because Embracer at the moment has laid off 906 people in the last 6 months. They are also looking to start removing people from Saber and Aspyr. They are trying to get more people out because of the fact that what they did was disgusting. They basically banked on, they bought a load of studios and a load of publishers to try and drive up their stock market price. So they tried to sell it to a Saudi company for like $2-3 billion. That then went tank, and now they're basically cutting people out and shutting studios down rather than just filling them off. What Brace has done is disgusting. But this game is probably not happening at all. We did speak about this last year when it was first announced. I know Shinobi was 100% a fan of this and he wanted to play it. Unfortunately, it's not coming, as far as we know. It's completely shelved. So, we're going to be jumping into Deals of the Week when we come back. It's going to be CD Projekt Red Witcher 3 news. We did also get confirmation. We did speak about this, Bam, last Friday when I sent you a message about Dragon's Dogma 2. Turns out my source was 100% correct.
Oh, yeah, exactly. 100% correct.
Yeah, I'm very proud of that. I've got some very knowledgeable people that do give me some information. We also got news on GTA 6, and that's when we come back, though. Don't go anywhere.
It deals off the week. If you don't find what you want, then
sorry, in front of you out.
Yeah, sorry, we can't help you out.
Kicking us off this week, you can pick up an Xbox Series X console and Forza Horizon 5 Premium Edition bundle using the code BFGaming, that is BFGaming, with free shipping at stockmustgo.co.uk, that is stockmustgo.co.uk, for £391 with free shipping. You can get Grand Theft Auto 5 on the Xbox Series X for £14.94 at Amazon. That deal is expiring fairly soon. The PS5 on Amazon is just £16.99. So that's a net couple of pounds extra at Amazon.co.uk. You can also find Shin Megami Tensei 3 Nocturne HD Remaster at the Game Collection this week for £9.95 with free shipping. Hellblade Senua's Sacrifice on PC at GOG this week is £3.79. That deal is expiring on the 20th, that is tomorrow. Grab that quickly if you want to pick that game up. You can also find a PlayStation 5 this week with the Stealth Horizontal Console Stand, which is usually retailing for about £30 extra. In this deal, you can get it for free with free click and collect for £3.95 delivery, all coming in at £399.99. That also comes with EA Sports FC24. The PS5 with DualSense controller charging station, that's free click and collect this week. Curry's, that is £17.99, 5% off, £3.99 delivery. That's for the PS5 DualSense controller charging station. You can get Elden Ring this week, last year's game of the year on PS5 at Cool Shop. With free shipping for £32.50. Mario & Rabbids Kingdom Battle. The code is in box. There's not a disc for this one. It's for Nintendo Switch, obviously. At Amazon.co.uk, you can pick that up for £12.99. If you're not looking to get the PS Portal this week, you can get the Backbone 1. It is the PlayStation gaming controller for Android. It is compatible with USB-C iPhones at Argos for £69.99 with £3.95 shipping. That's at Argos.co.uk. Bloodborne on PS4 on the PlayStation Store is £7.99. That deal is expiring next week on the 27th of November, so you have a bit of time. King of Fighters 15 on Xbox Series X at the Game Collection this week is £10.95 with free shipping. You can also pick up Gotham Knights Deluxe Edition at Amazon for the Xbox Series X for £14.95. Gran Turismo 7 this week is £29.99 at Smith's Toy Superstore. It's cheaper to buy it here than it is to get it in the Black Friday deal for the PS Store. So I'd head over to Smith's if I were you, pick this up. Gran Turismo 7 on PS5 is £30 this week. PS4 is £20. The Yakuza Like a Dragon Day Itchy Steelbook Edition for the Xbox One and Series X on the Game Collection is £8.95 with free shipping. The Mafia Trilogy on PC, that is the Remastered Trilogy, for £14.99 via Fanatical. You can also find a Sony PS5 Blu-ray console with Cobra Kai 2 Dojo's Rising
for £389.99 at scan. That's with free shipping. God of War, Horizon Zero Dawn, The Last of Us, and Gran Turismo Sport are £7.99 this week with free shipping from the PlayStation Store. That deal is expiring on the 30th of this month, so you have about a week and a bit to grab that quickly. The MetaQuest 2, 128GB, includes £50 credit for apps and games in the Meta Store, is £249.99 this week via the Meta Store itself. That deal is expiring on the 27th of November, so you have about a week to grab that quickly. With the Last of Us 2 announcement, The Last of Us Part 1 this week at Smith's is £37.99 for PS5. That's at Smith's Toy Superstore with free shipping. You can get that online. Next up this week, the Sony PS5 disc drive console includes an extra DPS5 DualSense wireless controller. For that, you'll get £409.99. But if you're looking for a game to get with it, SD24 and an additional DualSense controller is an extra £30. So you're getting an extra console and a game for just an extra £30 on top. A Lego Harry Potter collection this week on PS4 is digital via the PlayStation Store. You can get that for £6.99. That deal expiring on the 27th of November. Mafia Definitive Edition at Shop 2 this week is £6.85, 10% off. You can get the Mafia Trilogy, the full one, for £12.85 at Shop 2. Star Ocean Divine Force on Xbox and PS5 at Zatu Games is £12.69 with £1.49 delivery. That is Zatu Games. After Image Deluxe Edition on PS5 is £15.99. On PS4, Xbox and Switch, it's $19.99. That is at Amazon. You can get an average of about 27% off. Greed Full Gold Edition on PS5 this week is £9.95 with free shipping via the game collection. The PS5 Disc Edition at console at Shop 2. This doesn't have any extras with it, but it's £379 with free shipping. Metal Gear Solid Master Collection Volume 1 on PS5 is £34.95 at Amazon with free shipping. Death Stranding Director's Cut this week at Amazon for PS5 is £17.95. And you can also pick up a PlayStation 5 with an EA Sports FC24, Hogwarts Legacy, Lego Star Wars The Skywalker Saga, fantastic game, and the Barbie movie on DVD for £439.99 at Game with £4.99 delivery. That deal is expiring after Black Friday, so you don't have very long for that. That is a phenomenal deal. Star Wars The Skywalker Saga separately, though, if you wanted to get that on its own, is that fanatical right now for £9.99 on Steam. Terminator Resistance Complete Edition on Xbox Series X is £32.95 at Amazon. You can also pick up Mortal Kombat 1 on Xbox at Amazon for £29.99. Final Fantasy 16 on PS5 at Currys this week with free shipping is £32.99. And you can last but not least, The Last of Us Part 1 on Steam right now on CD Keys is £24.99 if you're looking to get a cheaper deal on that. And that is all for your deals for the week.
It deals of the week. If you don't find what you want, then
sorry, in front of you out.
Yeah, sorry, we can't help you out.
You don't
where the hell did Kenobi go?
I don't know. I think he's on. He just did. Shinobi just gone. He's just like, no, Super Mario is not good.
Hey, thanks, that bitch. I don't want to hear no more Super Mario slander. I'm done. That was it. Damn it, Major. I'm out of here, man.
How dare you?
Oh, man.
I'm sad for this poppycock.
Also, by the way, Major, this is gonna be an A1 podcast, man. I don't think me and you have ever disagreed so much on a podcast, man.
No, and it's mainly because I love Starfield, dude. I am a massive fan of that game. I love that game. Everyone's saying it's crap. We're like, no, it's not
a good game. It's a good game, bro. Like, I've been telling people for so long that game is a good game. I enjoy my time with it. I like the game. And I've been trying to get these, especially like all these Xbox fanboys on Twitter, right? The ones on Twitter is like, again, they think just because it wasn't nominated for Game of the Year that makes it not be a good game. I'm like, the game is still good, right? Like, you still enjoyed it, right? And they be like, yeah, you know what, man? You're right, I did still enjoy it. So that's all that matters.
I love that impression. That was brilliant.
That's it, man. I don't know.
Game, do that impression one more time.
Nah. That's it.
It's that guy from Parks and Recreation.
What's his bloody name? He was in that comedy show with Bruce Willis, in that comedy film. Tracy something, what was it? What's his name? Bam, come on, help me.
The black dude?
Yeah, Tracy something.
Tracy Morgan?
That's the one. That was the impression. Do that impression again. I love your first points.
Hey, I can't do this voice. Hey, listen, Luke. I'm just like PlayStation. You're going to get a one and done out of me. That's it. One and done.
That was a bang on Tracy Morgan impression. I'm going to have to go back and rewind that. But anyway, CD Projekt Red Quest Design has discussed. They have now confirmed. This is the first time this has ever been officially confirmed by CDPR. Cyberpunk 2 is officially in the works. It is being made on Unreal Engine 5.3, which is awesome. The original team is working on it. Paul Sasko, who is the lead quest designer, shared his thoughts on the next game, which is the Mysterious Orion Project. He said it's very in the early stage. They are currently working with a narrative director to kind of build out the quest and the story. They're all moved and are in the process of moving from Poland to Boston in the US, where CD Projekt Red have opened a new office. So they've moved from Poland into the US because of the Russia-Ukraine conflict. But one of the major challenges right now is getting to grips with Epic's Unreal Engine. They also have said they are struggling moving from the in-house Red Engine to the Unreal 5 Engine. I will say Unreal Engine 5, even though it looks simple, it's not. It's not simple to use at all. But it is remarkably intuitive. It is a very good engine to use. He did speak with the Neon Arcade. There's a lot of work to be done when it comes to the tool set because there are so many, I would say, specific things that our Red Engine was tailored for, which the Unreal Engine is not. So, of course, we need to make sure that all of this is built properly so we can do the games exactly the way we want to. As you know, the work is ongoing here. The advantages of Unreal are probably quite apparent. But it is far too early to go into details. This is obviously the first time that CDPR has confirmed Cyberpunk 2 is in development, which is very cool. I'm looking forward to seeing what they do with that because I do think CDPR, if they've learned from their mistakes from the first Cyberpunk game, then Cyberpunk 2 is going to be one of the best games ever made. It's probably going to be in the top 10 easily if they've learned from their mistakes of the last game, the state of the original game launched in. Witcher 3 Wild Hunt as well is also getting an official mod editor for PC users. That's going to be coming in 2024. Fans will soon be able to create their own custom content from Witcher 3. The official Witcher account on Twitter announced the news, saying that it will be free for some time next year. We are thrilled to announce we're working on a mod editor to allow you to create your own content for the game. We are releasing it for free next year. The mod editor will likely look further life into The Witcher 3. If this is also, there is rumours that they are trying to tweak the mod editor to also work with their other IPs, like Cyberpunk 2077, because at the moment people are used to creating their own mods in other engines and then transferring the files over. And there have been people saying it is a very complicated process trying to mod games for Cyberpunk. But if it works this way and they tweak the engine, it might work for all. So this we'll see, hopefully, because I would like to see some console mods, please. We've also had news, Warner Brothers is transforming all its games into live service. Now, I don't know what you guys think about it. I personally hate live service games.
My response to that is no, please, no, God, no. It's the one office clip when, what's his name?
I know you're talking about his name. I know what you're talking about.
No, God, please! Oh, it's like Toby. When Toby comes back, that's his name.
I don't know, when Toby comes back. I get the fear about live service games because we don't have a lot of good examples of live service games. You can probably count them on your hand. But I think if they can do it right, if it can be done correctly, then I'll take it. But coming from what Rocksteady used to make, I would prefer Suicide Squad not be live service.
It is live service, dude.
Yeah, I know, but I'm just saying, just looking at what they was doing, you know, with, like, the whole Arkham trilogy, that trilogy is absolutely amazing. I don't like Arkham Knight, but, you know, it is what it is. Everybody else says the game is great, so I guess I might just...
Shout out to Jamie Walker. He's the first person that ever followed us on Twitter. He's the original co-founder for Rocksteady. The first person ever to follow us on Twitter.
Oh, damn, out of the blue.
Yeah, and he's an absolutely lovely bloke as well, and he's now left Rocksteady because of the fact that Warner Brothers wanted to ship their games, now move them into live service games. Similar with Gotham Knights, and he disagreed with that.
I mean, but again, though, if Suicide Squad comes out, right, And it's a finished game. It has all the, it has content. It has extra costumes, extra stuff going on within it. And then if the live service aspect is, we just get more cosmetics. Maybe in a year we'll get to fight Brainiac, or we'll get to fight other villains, you know, due through content being added to the game. I'll take that. Like I said,
do you remember Gotham Knights, though?
I do, but Gotham Knights wasn't made by Rocksteady, though.
No, but that's exactly the sort of game that Warner Brothers want to make.
But that's what
was
I'm saying,
Gotham Knights live service?
Yeah, it was originally intended to be live service. Because it got a load of backlash, they took the live service elements out, but there's still live service elements in there.
It's not live service that launched Nightmare, but it was intended to be one. And, like, you can tell, like, whenever you play the game. Like, I played through that whole game. I got the platinum in that game. But, I mean, Suicide Squad, man, again, if it comes out finished quality game, if it has all, you know, a lot of content day one, if it's a complete story without no DLC or season passes that I have to buy, I'll take that. Because at that point, it's a finished game. And depending on what they add into the game later on, if the content is good and if it's not just some, you know, just some BS, hey, man.
Yeah. I mean, some of the examples they give, they have announced some of the Warner Brothers properties they want to turn into live service games. A couple of them I'm okay with. Game of Thrones, which 100% yes, please. Harry Potter would actually be a pretty decent... if they did it right, I'm not saying I want it. If they did it right, then yes. DC, which is mainly Batman. They haven't said if it's going to be Batman, but they want mainly Batman. And Mortal Kombat is the other one. Those are the four franchises they want to turn into live service.
I think if they do it right, it's good. But I think on past examples, I'm not too hopeful about that. I'm hopeful that the game will do good and that they'll choose the right parts of live service to actually implement and make good. But I don't really trust it. Live service games scare me.
Yeah, I mean, there's only four or five big live service games that have ever succeeded. The amount of people that think, oh, live service games, because they know Fortnite and other games like live service that do well, they think that's all the live service, and therefore live service is great.
Yeah.
All you've got to look back is the amount of indie live service games that release on a weekly basis far supersedes your wildest expectations. I think it's like 50 a week at this point, and they all flop. They all fail right out of the gate. You then look at all the games that have actually succeeded, like the Cycle Frontier. We had an interview with Jaeger last year. We interviewed the developers for it. That game was not doing good. They had a big community. There was a lot of fan feedback on it. They really enjoyed the Cycle. That game was canned because it made no money. You only get four or five big games every year, like Minecraft, Fortnite, Mario Kart 8, even though it is kind of live service. That game's going to stop being content from now. The last wave is out. There isn't going to be anything else. So that game's really not going to go anywhere until they release the next one. You only have four or five big live service games, and usually the games that are live service fail. That's why Sony cancelled six of them out of the 12 they had planned to release by 2025. There's now only six, because the original six tested poorly across the board. Not all live service games work, and I do not trust Warner Brothers with live service out at all. Not even the slightest. It's terrible. But if they release a good Harry Potter live service game and you play as a student, I'm 100% in that. I want that badly. Game of Thrones, yes. Because you could be a knight and you rise all the way up to be king at some point. Can you imagine a battle for the throne where you're fighting against, you're assembling armies as a live service and going to war in a live service Game of Thrones? Oh my God, would that be sick. That would be amazing. And you have dragons fly. Oh, mate, I want that. I want a live service Game of Thrones. That's the only one I find acceptable. But yeah, I do not trust Warner Brothers with live service games, because they usually don't do very well at all.
I don't like live service.
Oh, there he is.
But they just T4 your money. They're T4 your money.
Yeah, there is also the
issue
of battle passes and stuff, which a lot of the time, like Animal Crossing, not Animal Crossing, what's it called? Dreamlight Valley, Disney's Dreamlight Valley. They originally meant to free to play. You now got to buy it. Huh? But that's also live service at the same time. Like, I don't agree. If you buy something, you should get your content free. You shouldn't be having to pay extra for it.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Wait, people that bought the Disney game have to buy it again? after the beta.
Well, it was free to play. It was free to play during the beta, but then Game Mill said they're going to be releasing the full game when it releases. I think it's coming out next month. You have to buy it. So you have to pay, I think it's about £30 to buy the actual game. Then you have all the season pass and additional content, which is obviously the same stuff they had in the beta. That's still in the game. So you have to buy the season passes every month as well. Which is just a rip-off. That's one game I think would have succeeded if they kept it free to play would have been Disney's Dreamlight Valley. Unfortunately, they've gone the route of greed, and I don't think it's going to last for very long. Maybe a year or two, but I think it's going to flop as well. Live service games don't sell well because often it's just a big money grind. It's just a way to fleece another couple of quid out of your pocket.
Well, I also don't know that many people that want to spend like $30, $60, $40 on a game and then have to spend more money on the game that they've already paid for just to get extra content.
Yep. Yeah, there is also another question here, and I will quickly touch on this because I did speak to you, Bam, about this. Because we have to move on because we've gone way over time in the original part, Bam. Dragon's Dogma 2 release date was leaked by Peggy, the European Ratings Board. I did speak to you, Bam, before this ratings was announced, and I want you to confirm this for the readers so people don't think I'm turning porkies.
You definitely told me about this last Friday before it was even announced. You called it, you announced it. You dropped this news.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Because there are some people that still doubt. I don't know what I'm talking about. You've just heard it here first. Yes, the March 22nd.
The DM, I got the DM to show the proof, whatever. Whoever want to know, come. Hey, I got the proof.
Thank you. Yep. Bam Bam V3 on Twitter. You want to go ask him. But, yeah, we got news of this early Friday. From one of the guys who I can't say who he works for because that's going to give it away. But let's just say he works in the US office for someone involved in the game development. And he did confirm the release date to me. This was before Peggy leaked it. This was before this was announced in the press. I wasn't going to put it out there, but just in case I got in deep, deep doo-doo for putting this out into the public before it was meant to be. Because I didn't have the sources to back it up, and I'm not going to name the guy because I would get him fired. But yeah, the March 22nd, Friday, 22nd of March next year, Dragon's Dogma 2 will be releasing on PS5, Xbox Series X, and PC. There is a showcase next week on the is it next week? No, 10 days, so 28th of November. So we run it 9 PM UK time, 1 PM Pacific. I don't know the Eastern time on that one, but you will be able to watch the showcase. They're doing about 15 minutes of gameplay for Dragon's Dogma 2. It was previously teased to be releasing the game before April of next year anyway, but there was no official release date. People were thinking it may have been coming this year. Some people were saying January. We got told late February to March, and it turns out we were right, and it's going to be dropping late March now. Which I'm looking forward to. I'll be picking that game up on PS5 when it releases. Yeah, people think we don't know what's on. I called it, I got it right, and Bam can vouch. Anyway, we are also speaking about the video game prices. Apparently, this is just stupid. Strauss Zelnick, who is the head of Take-Two, as you guys know, he thinks, and I wanted your guys' opinion on this, because quite frankly, it's just the stupidest thing I've ever heard. He thinks that if a game is longer, it should cost more. Per hour value times the number of expected hours. That's how much they should be charging for the game, which is why people now think GTA 6 is going to be £100+ per copy. It's because of what he said, because the game is so long, therefore they should charge more than what it's currently valued at.
I might be crazy, but I feel like we've had this conversation before. I might be going insane right now.
Maybe, but I don't remember that.
I feel like a while ago we had a conversation about whether short games should be, like, $50.
Oh, yeah, I mean, he's gone the opposite way.
He's just like, every single game, if it's longer. No, that's stupid. Because games are already expensive. And also,
The comic we made is just laughable.
Well, it doesn't matter if the game, like, if people have waited 10-plus years for GTA 6, a lot of people aren't going to pay $100 for GTA 6 just because it's GTA 6. Like, that's not how that works. Spider-Man 2 released and it was like $90, people aren't going to buy it, or like, not most people are not going to buy it just because it's the sequel to PS4 Spider-Man. That's not how that works. Now, there will be the people that do end up buying that, and they're like, oh, no, it's really good, you should buy it. But no, if that was like a $100 game, no one should buy that.
Yeah, and I will say Strauss Zelnick, okay, is basically just reading Twitter. Because I have seen this argument repeatedly on Twitter, through Console Wars and everything. I read this daily. Right? People saying that Spider-Man 2, now you mentioned Spider-Man 2, that reminded me, Spider-Man 2 shouldn't have cost $70 because it's only like 15 hours long. That is where he's gone in that direction, because he's probably read those tweets and he's thinking, well, our game is going to be like 100 hours long, therefore we should charge more. This is why you should not bring things out into the public, because developers read them and they're like, oh, that's a good idea. This is how we're going to fleece people. Strauss Zelnick is exactly the sort of person who will read a tweet like that and think, bingo, light goes on, this is what we're going to try to sell our game at next. But I will quickly read part of his quote here, because this is just the most ridiculous. He said, you'll see that bears out in every kind of entertainment vehicle. By that standard, our prices are still very, very low, because we offer many hours of engagement. The value of the engagement is very high, so I think the industry as a whole offers a terrific price of value opportunity for consumers. Value opportunity is not a word. that's not something that exists, Strauss. Not in the slightest. He did obviously post this picture next to himself looking ripped, covered in baby oil, which was slightly concerning. Yeah, you've seen that video, he's basically just been in the gym, and he's come out of the gym, he's all sweaty, and he's like posing, and then he puts the face to his capture, we get the first, I'll gain more, come at me, bro. I dare you to challenge me, look at my ripped body, it's ridiculous. value of a game does not come from how long it is, it comes from how good it is. That's the difference. If something could be 100 hours of crap, I'm not paying you £100. We want to actually see the game's good first. Just because it's also GTA, the fact that you've lost 90% of your original workforce does not fill me with confidence that GTA 6 is going to be good. We've also heard, obviously, this was last week, we missed it last week, but GTA 6 official announcement is coming early December. Likely going to be at the Game Awards. I'm going to be calling it. It's going to be a Game Awards. I do think that's the place we're going to see the trailer, because it's going to be about a 5-minute showcase. Technically, it's like a new trailer of what the story is going to be and introducing the characters. We get this every year with Rockstar. Well, not every year, but we get this with Rockstar Games when they do this bigger initial trailer, which is probably going to be about 3, 4, 5 minutes. But that's all you'll get then until December of next year, which is when the game is currently slated to release. We're going to jump into some music. When we come back, we've got to speak on the Nintendo employees basically slandered Nintendo Japan. There's also just some take twos discussing movie options and some Netflix cancellations. When we come back, don't go anywhere.
I'm vanilla, baby. I'll choke you, but I ain't no killer, baby. 28 telling me I'm still a baby. I get love in Detroit like Skilla, baby. And the thing about the boy is,
I don't know what's been saving you. You can't calm me down. But you can whip your loving on me. That's right, whip your loving on me.
Young J-A-C-K-A-K-A, Rico like Suave, Young Enrique, speaking at A-K-A, she's the alpha, but not around your boy, she get quiet around your boy, hold on, don't know what you heard or what you thought about your boy, but they lied about your boy, going dumb, and it's something idiotic about your boy, she wearing cheetah print, that's how bad she won't be spotted around your boy.
I know what's been changing, you can't tie me down, but you can whip your lover on me, baby, whip your lover on me.
I'm vanilla, baby. I'll choke you, but I ain't no killer, baby. She's 28, telling me I'm still a baby. I get love in Detroit like Skilla, baby. And the thing about your boy is,
I don't know what's been changing. You can't calm me down. But you can whip your lovin' on me. Whip your lovin' on me.
Young M I S S-I-O-N-A-R-Y. He sharp like barbed wire. She stole my heart, then she got archived. I keep it short with a bitch, Lord Farquaad. All the girls in the front row. All the girls in the barricade. All the girls have been waiting all day. Let your tongue hang out, fuck everything. If you came with a man, let go of his hand. Everybody in the suite picking up their feet, stand up, big dance. And all the guys in the back waiting on the next track. Cut your boy a little slack. Young Jack. I'm vanilla, baby. I'll choke you, but I ain't no killer, baby. You're 28 telling me I'm still a baby. I get love in Detroit like Skilla, baby. And the thing about your boy is,
I don't know if things change and you can't tie me down. But you can whip your loving on me.
That's right,
whip your loving on me.
Welcome back. It's the Top Gaze Podcast, episode 119. Thank you all for joining us. Don't forget to check out the website, gamesinquiry.com. Find us on all socials, @gamesinquiry everywhere. It really helps out the channel if you click on a couple of links because we are trying to grow. We are looking at, obviously, advertising and selling stuff. We can't do that until we have an average steady viewership. Our numbers have been jumping up and down since we relaunched on a new server. The first month we had over 80,000, we dropped down to 17, then it was 16, and back up to 70. It's all over the place. Please make sure you keep steady, because obviously we need to keep growing, and if the numbers are going up and down, it doesn't look good. So, yeah, mate, just check out the website once in a while, it'd be helpful. We've got to talk about Nintendo Studios. Before we jump into that, though, I know you guys want to speak on the new Last of Us remaster, because they have just announced the Last of Us 2 is getting a remaster. Officially for PS5 with upgrade path detailed. PS4 owners can upgrade to the PS5 version for a reduced cost. I think it's at £10. The addition will include a steelbook case, 4 enamel pins, a Washington Liberation Front patch, and a total of 47 Society of Champions trading cards, including 8 holographic cards. They will be available via PlayStation Direct in several countries. It will not be coming worldwide. They have currently 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 countries are confirmed to get in this edition. That includes the US, the United Kingdom, Germany, France, Benelux, I don't know where that is, Italy, Spain, Portugal and Austria. It also confirmed that the PS4 owners will be able to upgrade for just $10. Saves from the PS4 will also carry over to the new Last of Us remastered version. The game originally came to PC, the Last of Us Part 1, the new remaster, that was in 2021. But there's no mention of this happening for the Last of Us Part 2 remaster. It's coming aside just to PS5 at the moment. It will include full DualSense support, developer commentary, and lost levels, which never made it into the game's initial release. So the last version will had a lot of, I think it was about 5 or 6 missions that were cut. They're going to be adding this now into the new remaster, which is going to make the game probably about 1 or 2 hours longer, which isn't too bad, actually. A new set of lost levels in Part 2 allows players a neat chance to check out some playable sequences. These aren't fully finished levels, but rather early development slices that that not only let you see some glimpses of Part 2's world, but also included embedded developer commentary to give them context. These will not be part of the full game. There will be a separate mode, so you need to go check these out. But they will include advanced graphics, native 4K output in fidelity mode, 1440p upscale to 4K in performance, and unlock frame rate option for TV support VRR, including increased texture resolution and level of detail distances, shadow quality and animation sampling rate. The new roguelike mode has also been confirmed. This will include deep combat via an entirely new mode. This means you have to survive as long as you can, so basically it's like time trial, trying to stay alive. There's also a whole host of different unlockable characters, so never before playable in the Last of Us franchise, each with unique gameplay traits, a variety of challenges, and new content incoming. It does sound very interesting, but at the same time, the main story is still the main story. A lot of the new content they've added is going to be in separate modes, not in the actual game. And I'm not too interested in basically enamel pins and a patch to spend extra money on. You don't get that, obviously, with the $10 one. Though you have to buy the physical edition, which is the WLF Washington Liberation Front edition, which is going to cost extra. Your thoughts on this Last of Us 2 remaster?
Yes. I've been waiting for this. When they like started talking about rumors of Last of Us Part II remaster, and like the composer leaked a bunch of crap in, like, I don't know, it's coming. And I was like, well, it better come soon because I need this, please. Yeah. I'm still trying to get every Last of Us game physical, and currently the only ones I still need are Last of Us Part One and Last of Us Part Two.
Well, the remasters.
No, I'm talking Last of Us Part One on PS5.
Oh, okay.
The PS4 is just called Last of Us Remastered.
Oh, yeah, it is, yeah.
But yeah, so I've been really excited for this. I plan to get the WLF edition because I think the little inclusions are really cool. But also, I'm a Last of Us fan. For most people, they're going to look at the WLF edition and they're going to be like, this is the biggest waste of money in the entire world. Why would you buy this? But as someone that, like, really cares about The Last of Us, and, I mean, The Last of Us is my favorite game I've ever played, and the second game's close, but I think my issues with the story at some points kind of take that away. But, yeah, I'm really excited about this.
And I'm looking forward to seeing how good it looks. I have seen, obviously, there are some screenshots out there floating around the internet. It does look rather nice, the great detailing they've added, and the way the remaster is vastly superior graphically to the last game. As far as this WLF edition, though, I don't need pins and a set of playing cards. I'm not going to be parting money for that, especially since the game's probably going to be this edition. What is it priced at? It's going to be priced at. Do you know, Nightmare? Do you know how much the WLF edition is going to cost?
No, because I haven't been able to find it on sale anywhere. I haven't been able to find it at all. I don't know where I know it's on Direct. I just don't know when they're releasing that to be purchased. Because I've looked on PlayStation Direct and they're not selling it yet. Not that I know of.
Maybe next month then they might release it. But if it's like $80 extra and then you get
If it's $80, then no. I would understand why it's $80 and they're just like, oh, no, you're also paying for a physical game, which we're not, because, you know, this is modern-day gaming, and they're not going to include a physical game with a steel... they're not going to include a physical game with a steelbook. They're going to be like, here's the steelbook case, but here's the digital code, because that's what they did with Spider-Man, and it's still one of the stupidest things I've ever seen in my life.
What's the point of having a case with no disc?
I don't know, maybe they expect you to buy the game twice. I don't know.
I'm certainly not doing that, but it depends on how much it costs.
I'm buying digital, and I think I only have to pay a £10 upgrade, so I'm kind of happy. I'm glad all physical crap is over. If I want to buy something physical, then I'll go.
Yeah, but that also leads to game preservation, though, because if something's digital, then it only exists on a server.
You don't get the game on the disc anyway. You got to download.
Switched to digital. Is to stop doing that because it costs more. But at the same time, if there are copies on like the original Xbox One when that console first released and the PS4, where the game codes was on the disc. People are now buying digital, they're switching away from imprinting the game on the disc. It's just
the life. Here's the thing, for my argument is, I don't like to install the game from the disc and then have to pop the disc in every time and have some laser reader that's going to fail, at some point, And the other thing is that when I get digital, let's say there's a new generation of PlayStation, because I own the digital version already, I may be able to have backwards on the PS6. You know what I'm saying? So if I bought the disc version of the PS4, I wouldn't be able to pay £10 to upgrade. I have to buy the whole thing again.
Yeah, but that's the way Nintendo does it, though. Nintendo has an issue with backwards compatibility and game preservation because of the fact that they delete content for last consoles. How many games was it? It was like 400 games they lost when they stopped supporting the original Wii. And because all those games are digital and they can't be bought physically or anywhere else, that game's lost. It's something that they need to stop doing. This is why I prefer physical, for the fact that I know for a fact
that I'm not going to lose that game if they decide to stop supporting it.
As long as they make physical, the Pirates are going to rip it.
Yeah, and they do that all the time. You can't really get away with that.
As long as they do that, then they'll preserve the games. Because really, the only true way to preserve games now and always is piracy. But that's going to change now. But before the digital shit, most of the preservation... I mean, if you think about it, remember those arcade games? The ones that we saw in the home. They're all on those Pandora boxes. You know, those arcades or tiny arcades and all that. They're all on there. But all the history that's being lost is preserved there. If we never had that, that shit would never exist anywhere. Do you know what I'm saying? So, inflation has preserved stuff that we would never see again, like lost arcade games. Do you know what I mean? From back in the day, they're being preserved by emulation. So as much as people talk against it, I think for the past, you know, when you got emulation, that preserves it, man. And then remember, you got licensing issues as well. So they might do Marvel or Turtles or something. They lose the license, and then that game has to be pulled, and it's gone forever. Unless you own it in your archive, but you know, you'll never see that shit ever again. It'll never exist ever again if it weren't for emulation. Do you know what I'm saying?
Mm. Yeah, I don't. I'd rather have games physically, to be honest. If I know for a fact that Nintendo, if they ever switch off the servers, for example, Tears of the Kingdom or Breath of the Wild, then I have a copy of that game, and I'm never going to lose it, and they can't take that away from me. But if it's digital only, then it's gone.
Yeah,
and I'm never going to get to play it again because Nintendo doesn't want you to. Same with Echo the Dolphin when they were trying to remake it. Nintendo said no, but you can't buy or play Echo the Dolphin anywhere unless you go try and buy a pirate copy or, you know, something, a ripped console from China.
But that was in Sega Arcade Classics or whatever.
Yeah, but there's no actual... No, it doesn't exist anymore.
Well, Echo the Dolphin, it does in the...
You can't buy a first party or an actual physical or a game copy of that game unless you buy a pirate copy.
No, I thought it was in the Sega Collection.
I don't think so. I'd have to go through it.
It's in the Sega Collection.
I'll have a look through that in a bit.
Yeah, they got it in their collection, I think. Because I bought it. I bought the collection. I swear it's in there.
Is it a physical or a digital?
Digital.
Mm. I'd be worried.
No, wait. I don't know if Sega Collection has a physical version. They might do. I don't know.
Yeah, we need to start forcing developers to make physical copies of the game.
And don't worry, man. They're putting the next Yakuza game.
Yeah, that is true. That would actually be nice if they had an actual arcade. They introduced a proper arcade with old Sega games you couldn't find anywhere else. I'll be into that.
In the future, they'll have it in a Yakuza game. You know, like Daytona 2. How long did that take? 15 years?
Yeah.
Yeah, see? They're putting it in a Yakuza game.
But anyway, we've got to speak about Nintendo. The Japanese Nintendo employee has said it's a haven for geniuses, but it's hell for the average person. Koichi Mura has said he has no regrets working there, and that his employees are wonderful. However, it is hell to work at for the average person. Mura is an artist who's been working in the industry since 1999. Previously worked on Ridge Racer VR, R Racing Evolution, and Time Crisis 5 for Bandai Namco, as well as Kingdom Hearts HD 11.8 and Kingdom Hearts 3 for Square Enix. He's credited as a landscape artist on Tears of the Kingdom, but as reported by Automaton, he recently posted on X, formerly Twitter, to say he had quit the company because he felt it was only suitable for people who are normally gifted at game development. He said it's an incredible company, but wouldn't lightly recommend it to others. It is a haven for geniuses and superhumans, but for an average person like me, it was hell. However, thanks to this, I was able to realise I wasn't suited for the role and found the confidence I needed to pursue other goals. This was the biggest achievement that working for Nintendo brought me. I didn't have a single regret for having inspired to work there, getting the job and then ultimately quitting it. To avoid any misunderstanding, he reiterated that he felt Nintendo was a really good company, staff were wonderful people, and that he was amazed they could produce such great products one after the other. In a separate tweet, he said he earned less than $40,000 at Bandai Namco. Jesus, between 1999 and 2015, working at Bandai, he only made $40,000.
He earned more than $46,000 working at Square Enix, but then when he moved to Nintendo, he started earning over $70,000, which is a remarkable increase. Bandai definitely got a very good deal for $40,000 for a developer in 2015. Jesus. Moore noted that the games industry salaries aren't often revealed in Japan, but as a freelancer no longer looking for permanent employment, he thought it would be helpful to reveal his salary information in the hopes that it would improve working conditions and transparency in Japanese studios. Interesting note there, what life is like for Nintendo developers. Movie news though, Take Two is reportedly discussing movie adaptations. I have had these conversations with guys at Rockstar about this, for making a GTA movie. But earlier this week, Nintendo revealed that it has partnered with Sony to release a live-action...
Oh, why? Because you called it, like, a while ago?
A long time ago. Yes. When the original... What? I think it was in February when they released the Mario Brothers movie. I did say that I spoke to someone Nintendo, and I did confirm what the next movie would be, and lo and behold, I was right. Legend of Zelda has been confirmed as the next Nintendo film. I did, obviously, leak this a little bit early. This was back in February, March time. Bam will be there, remember that, because he was in the call at the time. But in light of this, Take Two quarterly earnings on Wednesday, the publisher asked how willing it was to find ways to extend the RDR franchises and GTA. Strauss Zelnick said the company's taking a very selective and very careful approach in adapting its properties to film or TV. Borderlands and Bioshock are currently in the works, we know this already. But Zelnick said Take Two is discussing further adaptations, but is wary of the damage it causes if the movies misfire. He said, if we're willing to use the company's balance sheet to make a movie or TV show, then in the event of great success, we would benefit from it. He said, we're not prepared to use the company's balance sheet that way because the risk versus reward profile is unappealing to us. They're very difficult businesses. When you look at other movies, only a few have ever made it. Since we're the only way that we could be in that business through a license arrangement with a third party. And let's put it into context, Mattel said they'll be expecting profits from licensing the Barbie IP for a movie will be about $125 million. Now, Barbie is a massive, massive hit. It's an extraordinary hit, so you don't want to posit a massive hit and look at the numbers that way. Even in a good news scenario, the license fees would be a fraction thereof for many of our properties. Not really enough to be meaningful here, but we have to weigh that too against the risk of failure, and the hit ratios in the motion picture business are vastly lower than they are in the interactive entertainment business. He said, so around 80 or 90% the hit ratio for well-run movie studios, around 30%. We just say there's a 70% chance that a movie that we license could fail. Sounds a bit of Scott Steiner mathematics there. So in the success, the numbers in terms of the benefit to our bottom line is not de minimis. It's not zero, but it was not really material to what we do around here. In failure, we run a risk of compromising the underlying intellectual property, so it's a high bar. Next film that they are working on is the Borderlands feature film scheduled for August 9th, 2024, with Kate Blanchett, Kevin Hart, and Jack Black. Oh, dear God, no. They're not funny together. The movie is being written and directed by Eli Roth. It also announced last year the Take-Two are partnered with Netflix live film adaptation of Bioshock. That becomes Netflix, so mainly, exclusively to Netflix. They said, we have licensed two films, one to Lionsgate, and onto Netflix. Rockstar proves he only wants to turn down a GTA movie starring Eminem, which would have been directed by Top Gun director Tony Scott. Unfortunately, that movie never materialised, which is sucky, because Eminem in a GTA film would have been absolute banging. Netflix, our last bit of news this week. Netflix have cancelled three very popular shows, including Shadow and Bone is now gone. That will not be moving forward. The animated agent Elvis, Farzad, and Captain Fall have also been canned. Deadline has reported the decisions were not least partially based on weighing viewership against production costs, but scheduling headache in the wake of the strikes also played a role. Now the actors are off the picket lines going back to set, much as Hollywood is scrambling to push projects back into production, and these shows were not doing very well. In particular, Australian Bone was set up as potentially a fantasy franchise for Netflix, but it's the only series of Today shows to get more than one season. The rest are only released with one season, which is just sucky. Captain Falls' 20-episode first season was planned to be split into two parts, with the first part airing in July. It's currently unclear when the second batch of episodes will come out, if they will at all. Agent Elvis, meanwhile, was like Archer, if you guys remember that from the early 2000s. actual desire to become a secret agent is based on Elvis Presley's apparent desire. He wanted to be an FBI agent. That's interesting. But they said it's a raucous, funny, and loving tribute to Elvis. IGN gave it a 7 out of 10. Not surprised, and they give everything a 7 out of 10. Glamorous just premiered in June. That has also been cancelled, which is stupid. If something's only just started releasing. But those are your Netflix cancellations. We haven't had any news. They did release a Netflix Geek Week. I was not interested in a single thing they showed. I'm not a fan of cartoons. I don't watch cartoons. But I don't know whether you guys were interested in anything that Netflix showed during Geek Week. Was there anything that stood out to you in particular?
Hang on a minute.
I didn't even know that they did anything remotely like showing off anything.
Yeah, they released like 30 trailers on YouTube.
So 30 trailers for shows that are all going to get cancelled after one season, got it.
Yeah, probably.
I'm very specific on which Netflix shows I watch. Because at this point, I'm only watching the ones that do well. Because the ones that do well most likely won't be cancelled. Because
Netflix with anything. Because they just don't understand.
Netflix is so hit or miss on their writing. And then they have shows that have good writing and like set up things really well. And like, but like one of these people didn't watch it, so that means that it was a fail. So then they just cancel it. And I'm like, okay, well, what was the point of making people get invested in the show? When a Netflix show leaves off on a cliffhanger at this point, I'm just like, okay, well, don't get my expectations up because it'll be canceled.
What they should do is what other platforms and other networks do is they commission it for more than one season at a time. For example, if you supply a script for the first season and they want to keep reading to see where the show might go, well, ideally you're going to take it, they'll commission a second season on top of it. BBC occasionally do this, Channel 4, Sky. Netflix doesn't. I don't know a single streaming network that does that. But I think in terms of what Netflix produces, if they're going to keep people engaged and keep people actually wanting to watch Netflix, they need to. They need to start commissioning for more than one season and actually let those seasons play out rather than cancelling it like they've done with so many other shows halfway through. They leave the show on a cliff end and then cancel it after one season. It's just a complete colossal waste of time. What was the point of me watching this if you're just going to cancel it? This is why I don't really watch Netflix anymore, and I don't think many people do now anyway compared to what they were watching it 5 years ago.
They put the price to ridiculous prices. You could get a Cineworld pass for cheaper.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
And you can watch most of these shows anyway. If you don't want to watch Netflix, there are websites out there that let you watch, you know, copied versions of it. It's usually very good quality as well. Rather than give your money to Netflix. I personally wouldn't give Netflix a single penny. They've got enough and they don't know what they're doing with the content they've got. I haven't watched Netflix shows probably in about a year, 2 years. I'm watching reruns of Brooklyn Nine-Nine on Netflix because I'm just not interested in anything else. There's nothing on that network I want to see. But anyway, that's going to do it. That's been episode 119. Thank you everyone for joining us. Don't forget to check out the website. Follow us on all the socials. I want to thank Bab.
Black Friday. Come on.
Yeah, Black Friday. Yeah, that will all be included in the deals of the week. So don't worry about that.
Yeah, but there's a few deals now. Amazon sliced.
Yeah, but we'll close that in deals of the week, though. We'll do that later. All right, that.
Okay.
Anyway, we're going to wrap up. Thank you to Bab. I know he's currently on mute. He is still in the call. I don't know if he's actually talking or not. Is it out? No.
So they stepped away.
Yeah. Thank you to Nightmare.
No problem.
And thank you to Shinobi again.
No problem.
Even if you did go off on some rent. This is a bit messy. Anyway, we'll be back next week, hopefully. We should be launching our Kickstarter next Saturday. We have got a trailer recording on Tuesday, so if that all goes well, then next weekend we'll be launching our Kickstarter. Please keep an eye out for that. Like and retweet at the very minimum if you can, please. If you can support the Kickstarter and get us over our goal so we can actually launch the demo and get the game made, that'd be terrific. There is a lot of work gone into this. This is over a year of hard work, and I'm really hoping that the game gets made because it has been a labour of love, and I think personally I'm in love with it already, and it's not even out yet.
But yeah, all that details will be on the Kickstarter when it launches. Keep an eye out for it, please. That's going to do it. I will see you next week. I've been Major. Don't forget to check out the website, follow us on socials, and love your leisure. Happy gaming. Take care. Bye.
It's the Talking Games Podcast.